Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brew-Built X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brew-Built Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brew-Built line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brew-Built X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brew-Built conicals. You can trust Brew-Built with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brew-Built at morebeer.com.
Home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, beer drinkers.
Get ready for an all-new experience in information exchange and beer culture.
Your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers from around the globe
right to your home.
You're not just listening to broadcasters. It's the Brewcasters
on the Brewing Network.
Happy Father's Day, fellow TBNers. It's another great Brewcast from the BN Studios in sunny California.
175 degrees.
How is everybody doing today? Daniela, good to see you.
Good to see you too.
As if I didn't see you all day.
Yeah.
JP, nicer to see you even.
Well, hey, I appreciate it. I'm not wearing my skirt today, but you know how it goes.
You got a nice shiny head there.
And thank you.
By that I mean the one that your brain is in.
And, thank you. I appreciate that.
With us today in the studio, we are doing a BJCP show, and with us is a BJCP board-certified judge, Kevin Pratt.
How are you?
I always do that, Kevin. It's my fault. Try that again.
You're not the first person to cut me off.
Get used to it. It gets worse as the show goes. Now, it's usually just the beginning. I always tend to leave everybody off but me. It's very strange.
Yeah, I wonder why.
I don't know how that happens. Kevin, a BJCP certified judge, BJCP organizer, homebrewer extraordinaire, is with us today to talk all about the BJCP. We're going to go into style guidelines. We're going to go into judging. We're going to do some actual judging on the show today. Is that right, Kevin?
So far as I'm concerned, yeah.
Okay. I do have a bunch of listener homebrew. We've had it in the fridge for a while now, and we're going to do it. We're going to let you behind the iron curtain, so to speak.
Nice.
Because, you know, a lot of people don't know. They send in their beers to these competitions all the time.
Yeah.
And then they don't know what the process is that takes place back there.
Yeah, a lot goes into judging and competition, just organizing it in general, but especially just judging it. It's actually a lot of work, and a lot of thought goes into it.
More than just drawing lots.
Yeah.
And drinking other people's beer.
This one wins.
Yay! So we're going to do a little bit of that today. Probably from top to bottom. We'll go BJCP, organizing an event, what happens, how you get... We're always asking for judges here for people on the Brewing Network,
and
maybe we'll explain to people why today.
Why, yeah.
It'd be a good thing to do. And then really just go ahead through a score sheet and have you taste some beers for us and really kind of let us in on what you're looking for and what we're tasting.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, cool. So as you know, we'll get to that just a little bit later in the show. A couple of things to do beforehand. It is the Father's Day show, so I think we're going to try to get my dad on the line.
Oh, really?
Mother's Day show, we got her on the phone and did a little bit. Happy Mother's Day. I thought it would only be fair to do the same thing.
In case Pops gets left out, right?
Yeah, now I have two dads in true white trash fashion.
Do they know which one is the real one?
I think what we're gonna call my biological dad today.
Okay.
And Danielle, anytime that you want to see if we can get him on the phone, we're gonna try to call my biological dad today. And then if later on in the show, because my stepdad, he can be real colorful. So we might see if we can get it. I actually left him a message, a good happy Father's Day thing. Good son I am, I left a message. And see if he can call back. And if he calls in at any time during the show, the later the better, it'll be a real treat.
So you being on the air is not the only way you can love?
Yeah, exactly. It's very close. I've not talked to my folks in months. In fact, I think the last time I talked to my mom, it was on the air as well. So why don't we do that? With my biological dad lives in Connecticut still, as you all know. That's where I'm from. And happy Father's Day, Dad.
Thank you, son.
How are you today?
This is your biological dad.
My biological. I was just explaining my very trailer trash sort of life that I have several fathers, and you are the one who actually planted the demon seed. So to speak.
And you are a demon.
How's Connecticut today?
Connecticut's very hot today.
Humid, huh?
Hot and humid. Your nephew went in my swimming pool today for about 30 seconds.
Ah, little Justin is his name, my brother's kid. I guess it's my brother's first Father's Day, too, isn't it?
He's in the chat room, too.
Oh, cool.
It is. So they get, they're here, they're visiting.
Very nice.
We had a nice day.
Are you guys having some beer in my honor?
No beer.
And why in your honor, by the way?
Jeff? I don't know.
it's your father's day.
Because my dad doesn't drink beer, so it would have to be like a special situation for him to be drinking.
Awake?
I can't. I went on the Atkins diet. I lost 21 pounds, and I don't have to take insulin anymore, so it's a good thing.
Oh, nice.
Meanwhile, you're withering away to nothing, and you know that Atkins, like, died of a heart attack or something, don't you?
I do know that, but my doctor, I went to my doctor, he said, keep doing what you're doing, it's working.
He's a quack. I guess if you went off the insulin, that's pretty good, though.
Yeah, I'm really happy to be off the insulin.
My dad has what they call the diabetes.
Oh,
yeah.
Capital T? Lowercase D? Or
my whole family does it. It's so weird. Like, instead of saying he has diabetes, mm-hmm. they say he has the diabetes. Or you know what? My aunt used to do this. He's got the sugar.
The sugar.
Yeah, we do that too.
You say that? You got the sugar?
You get the sugar.
What's weird is that it's actually the opposite of having the sugar, isn't it?
That's totally a European thing here.
Well, that's why Europe is
from your Italian
is,
family.
Yeah.
We
backwards.
Say that in Europe, you have the sugar.
So do you still have the sugar and you just don't need insulin?
I used to have to take insulin, but since I'm not having any carbs, my sugar levels are normal.
Okay. Well, good for you.
Yes.
I'm
really happy about that.
That's great. And are you guys enjoying the swimming pool out there?
Yeah.
All right.
Very nice.
You can't buy, you know what the problem is my brother's having? We'll get him on the phone here, too. You can't buy alcohol on Sundays in Connecticut.
Oh,
and he
man.
Forgot to bring beer with him from New York.
Oh, no.
So he's just, like, dying there.
No, actually, there is beer in the house.
Oh, okay. What kind of beer is it?
It's probably a local brand, you know. Probably, I think it's Corona.
Yeah.
Corona?
The local Corona bottle.
Yeah.
It was the domestic, imported from Mexico domestic stuff.
Yeah, okay. Beautiful. All right, well, I just wanted to say happy Father's Day and introduce you to the world, Dad.
Okay, thank you.
All right, put my ugly-looking brother on the phone,
your
if you will.
Ugly-looking brother? Hold on.
Thanks.
He's chatting with me.
He's on the chat room.
Hey, Puto.
Hey, I forgot to say happy Father's Day to you, too.
Oh, you forgot. That's funny. That's really funny. I was just saying, hey, Dad, make sure to let him know, don't worry about me. Because I'm cool. I mean, I'm just like, you know, I'm just his brother and, you know, his best friend and his, you know, confidant and shit like that, so I don't need any of that. But
I thought you didn't have any beer there. You sound angry and drunk.
Had another thing.
No, I'm inspired by Jameel, actually, is what's going on.
I lent you $20 back when you were 10, and I want it back now.
Yeah, exactly.
I talked to my brother early.
Reggie was bad then.
Yeah. I talked to my brother early. He called and was like, reminding me to say Happy Father's Day to my dads, you know, all eight of them or however many I have. And I was like, oh, yeah, cool, thanks. And then I hung up and was like, oh, shit, he's a dad now, too.
Right. Yeah, nothing was said, though. It's all right.
Hey, no problem. Are you you getting the little boy on the beer there in the swimming pool or what?
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
Not the beer because there's, like, just Coors Light here, so.
Oh, you don't want to give him that.
No.
That's no good.
And there's other adults around, and you don't want them to see that.
Yeah.
He does. I don't know if I told you, though, but he's definitely going to be a hophead because all my bruises, like, I'll dip my finger in there or, you know, put a little in his bottle.
Yeah.
And he loves it.
He likes the hops, huh?
Loves it.
Yeah, you're going to have to move them out to the West Coast then.
Absolutely. No. Which is strange because, you know, bitter. Babies inherently don't like bitter right off the bat, you know? That's
a
defense mechanism. But same thing with wine. He likes the big tannins in wine.
Really?
Oh, it's phenomenal.
I'm trying to figure out if he's real advanced or half a retard.
Well, what's the difference?
Not much if you look at Rain Man.
Or or you, right?
Yeah, or me, exactly.
I was wondering if apples fell far from trees.
A good question. All right, well, happy Father's Day to you.
Oh, well, thank you.
On your very first one.
Thank you.
We actually sent a card.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's in the mail, right, Daniela?
It is, absolutely. Yeah. We sent it yesterday.
Oh, thanks, Daniela. I appreciate it.
It'll go out Monday.
I take good care of you.
I'm thinking of me, man. Daniela.
You're welcome, buddy.
All right, brother, you have a good day. You enjoy that stuff, huh?
All right, enjoy the show.
See you, man.
Bye.
Bye. All right. The other Crosley. And the other Crosley.
There's a lot of Crosleys.
They're both funnier than you.
They are.
I don't know if you knew that.
That's why I had to get them off the air real quick.
You're
and really, and really good looking, too.
Yeah. Really?
The Crosley men are good looking. I don't know what happened to Justin.
Yeah. I'm the only one with a face for radio.
Yes.
I guess apples do fall far from trees.
Apparently.
Very far.
Okay, I do have a little bit of feedback for you folks today. A couple of things going on. People asking a lot about what's upcoming for the Brewing Network and how they can do certain things. This one starts okie dokie.
Wow.
That's not my start, it's their start. Okie dokie. I've been a long-time listener, though infrequent poster, to the forum and chat, and have been continually ready and ever hopeful to buy a shirt, hat, or whatever. Every time I check the store link, it takes me to an empty eBay store. Now, Jason said at the anniversary show that the shirt will be on the website next week. I think I actually probably said that.
Yeah.
And that would be, of course, last week now, if you follow my math. My question is, Sean is telling us to buy some, and y'all comment routinely about someone sporting a shirt. When, oh when, can we get to buy one? Thanks, John. P.S. Yay, Vinnie Puppet. P.P.S. You may want to consider a special order TBN Jane hat as
it's
well.
From John?
Yes, from John.
I would like to,
not our John, yeah. I don't think, although it could be our John. Yeah. You never know.
I would like to say I did not write that, but I'm interested in the answer.
Me too.
Yeah. Everybody's interested. Okay, the answer is we do have merchandise available. We are refusing to use eBay this time around because they take from us twice.
Yes.
They take from us when you pay the PayPal, and they take actually three times. They take from us to post, which is pretty nominal.
Right.
And then they take for us when you buy from eBay, and then they take from us when you pay the PayPal after you've bought on eBay. All of these things should sound like one transaction,
yeah.
But they're not. And so the three transactions, it's just very inefficient. And as we're working to actually pay for our expenses around here, we're waiting to get our online store going. And I will tell you this, the good bubweb.com has offered to help, and I think we're going to take him up on that offer.
Nice.
So what is going to happen is as soon as we come back from the NHC, which is later this week, by the way, the 22nd through the 24th, and we will be broadcasting live on Friday the 23rd and Saturday the 24th from the National Homebrewers Conference in Orlando, Florida. We're going to sell some shirts there to the people that are present because we need to pay for that whole trip. When we come back, the store hopefully will be functional.
Nice.
I know you've heard all this before, so if it's not there, F you, whatever. I do appreciate that you're all very interested, and that's why we got the merch. I'm just trying to do it in the most efficient way I can.
That is really inefficient on eBay's part, because they pay a fee to the credit card company. Mm. You know, it's
they own PayPal. It's their service, so really they're just making money on every end they can.
Don't they? I think they have to pay something to get to use the Visa network, to use the MasterCard network.
Yeah, I guess so.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. So Visa charges them, and then they charge us. And
Gary, are you listening? Gary Foster?
Get to work on it.
Calling you out, pal.
Is he an eBay guy?
Yeah, he programs for eBay.
Get to work,
which
buddy.
Is probably why it sucks, because he sucks.
Stop drinking so much and get to work. So anyway, hopefully after the NHC, and now that I've called out Bub for helping us, I've mainly done that, so now you can yell at him as well, not just
me.
Nice. Actually, I don't even think he knows that I'm going to take him up on his offer yet.
Send all your hate mail, too.
Yeah. So do go check out bubweb.com. He's got real cheap servers there. If you want to get yourself a little server and a website of your own, you can do that through bubweb.com. So that's the shirt information. Give us till after NHC. After that, send your hate mail to Daniela@thebrewingnetwork.com.
Yeah, I would like to get some hate mail.
Hey, guys, and Daniela, what did you spend my donations on?
Ooh.
Beer? Or did you put it towards some electronics?
Strippers.
He's just kidding, though. He says, you've probably had millions of suggestions over the last year, and you may have already had this suggested. But what do you think about doing a barbecue show? You could bring in some brewers that have some good beer recipes or beer marinades, etc. If someone could explain the science behind cooking with beer and why it tastes so good. It's summertime, and I just cleaned and refurbished the grill. I need some new ideas. Oh, smoking meat would be sweet. Just ask JP.
That's right.
Good wood chips and beer combos to smoke. That's all for now. Thanks, and keep up the good work. An excellent idea, and yes. We have thought about doing food shows. We've been working on it. They've been in the works for a while. I'm trying to get the right one set up. In fact, the FM show that we just did today was a bit of a food pairing show with beer. And what we're going to do is absolutely do a food show. But I really like this idea, and to do, in particular, a barbecue show.
Barbecue and beer and smoking and those kind of woods and stuff. It's beautiful.
I think that's exactly what we're going to do. So I am planning the show specifically about the barbecue. It will be during the summertime. I'm hoping maybe next month we'll get it going for you.
Cool.
Great idea from Blake. I absolutely appreciate that. I'm going to line up some chefs and some home brewers and some people. My brother is a chef, a great chef, and hopefully he can get on here and tell us a few things about it. So we will definitely organize an entire show around barbecuing with beer.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Great idea.
We'll make some ribs and stuff.
Thank you for the suggestion. Yeah, JP does make some great beer ribs.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, last one. I just found your site, and I think it's great. I will be telling all my brewing buddies about your station. I was wondering if you have any thoughts into traveling to different sites around the country or around the world. Just interested in knowing some future plans. Please keep up the good work, and I'll be listening. Thanks from Robert. Robert! I'll have you know, it is definitely a dream of the Brewing Network to do a traveling show. We are hoping to, at some point, and we have no idea when, actually hit the road for a summer, probably. Do the old Winnebago type of tour, and broadcast from different places all around the country, and then eventually branch out outside of the country. So to answer your question, yes, we would love to do it. It's a dream of ours, but obviously we should probably figure out how to pay for where we are right now, before we go doing the thing.
On that note, send your donations, too.
But with all that complaint, actually, things are going very well for the Brewing Network. Sponsors are really taking hold, and thanks to you listeners really being very active with the sponsors and letting them know how much you appreciate them participating in the Brewing Network, and because you tune in every week and you guys are so active that I'm not even going to complain about money this show. Things are going quite well, at least with leads, with sponsors being very interested and very happy about your responses to them. If that keeps taking place over the next year or so, then we will absolutely put on our agenda a national brewing network tour.
You know, it's great. I kind of cruise some other homebrew forums and stuff like that on the internet, and you know, not saying who I'm affiliated with or anything, and
right.
And people, you know, just to see what kind of weird advice people are giving. And on one thread, some guy just discovered the Brewing Network, and he was telling a bunch of people about it and how great it was. And it's kind of neat, you know, when you're in this kind of microcosm of people. You kind of just take it for granted that everyone knows who you are.
Yeah.
You know?
Or at least knows about the BN, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's kind of nice to kind of branch out from that, and then you realize that it's just kind of it's growing, it's infecting everyone, and it's kind of neat to see.
It's very exciting to watch it grow, and in fact, we have gotten a lot of new listeners over the past month or so. So hello to our new listeners and welcome, whether you're an archive listener or a chat room user. If you can't ever listen live, it's a great time in the chat room. I see a bunch of people in there right now chatting with Daniela and doing that whole thing, and you just hit the chat now button right on our main page at thebrewingnetwork.com, and you can join that kind of fun. If not, keep enjoying the archives. That's why we give them to you. And welcome to the Brewing Network. You are now fellow TBNers, just like those who have been around since the beginning. Everybody's welcome.
Say it loud, say it proud.
That's a parade that I just went to.
Yeah.
And remember what it was about. You are tuned into the Sunday Brewcast right here on the Brewing Network. We have Kevin Pratt, certified BJCP judge, with us today.
You said BJ.
And when we come back, we'll be talking all about BJCP guidelines and good beer etiquette. Right here on the Brewing Network.
You're listening to the Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
And now back to the Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters
on the Brewing Network.
right, welcome back to the official BJCP show with Kevin Pratt helping us out today right here on the Brewing Network. Kevin!
Howdy.
You need to give us the down low. Everybody throws this word BJCP around like everybody knows what it is, but...
Sometimes it's a four-letter word.
That's absolutely right. So what we need to do is kind of start with the basics. A lot of people have never competed before. A lot of people don't brew to style and maybe don't know what the BJCP is. So let's start right from the beginning.
Well, first off, it stands for Beer Judge Certification Program.
Okay.
And it is basically an adjunct to the overall hobby of brewing. It's a way in which a lot of people gain extra insight into brewing, gain extra competence in their own beer making and understanding of styles. And just to take a preparatory course for BJCP test will make you a better, more aware brewer, even if you don't actually pass the test.
Okay.
The Beer Judge Certification exists to recognize tasting and evaluation skills, to promote the appreciation of real beer, and to help to sanction and to run competitions with style guidelines and overall competence of judges.
Okay. So it's there to improve the whole situation, and that's what we've kind of known all along anyway, but we got to get into how it does that improvement. First, let me take a phone call we got right here. You're on the Brewing Network.
What's up?
Hey, who's calling?
Mrs. Henning.
Hello, Mrs. Henning. Are you still listening in?
I'm still listening in.
Ah, how about that? So the Internet's still working for you?
Just barely.
Beautiful. What can we do for you today, Mrs. Henning?
I just wanted to wish all the fathers a happy Father's Day.
Oh, nice.
That's very nice. Happy Father's Day to everybody.
And we miss you guys.
Well, I'm glad that you're still tuned in there. We got you for a little while longer, I guess. Mr. Henning's what, a father like eight times over or something? What do you guys got going on over there?
We have four kids.
Four times the happy Father's Day to Mr. Henning.
Right.
All right. So a little while longer, we still get you. I hear that there's a rally going on that people are going to send you CDs of the show all the time.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that on the forum. That's pretty cool.
That is cool.
And donations, too.
And donations as well. If you want to donate to the Henning's Internet Fund, you can just hit the donate button on the Brewing Network, and I'll be sending it out to them, Brewer's Code. All right? Thanks, Mrs. Henning.
Yep.
All right. We'll see you later. Very nice. Good happy Father's Day to all the brewers. A supportive wife, even though we take the husbands away every Sunday from 5 until whenever.
Until we want to give them back.
Yeah. All right, Kevin. So let's get a little further into this.
Okay.
Now, you just told us what the organization is there for. What are the guidelines, and how did they come about?
Well, the guidelines are really sort of a reflection of two things. One, they're a reflection of what's really sort of popular to be entered into competition. Two, they reflect both the current trends in brewing professionally and protect a few historical styles as well.
Okay.
Within the style guidelines are descriptions of the range of the overall style, and then give an example of what that style is that can be bought commercially. There are a few of the styles that are largely the purview of homebrewers, and there really aren't any commercial examples of that sort of thing.
Such as?
Schwarzbier.
Okay.
It's really sort of the purview. There are a few around the world in small little pubs, but there really aren't too many good commercial examples.
And what about the classic American pils? Jamil was kind of saying you can't really find a good commercial example of that anymore either.
Well, a strong case is made that Bohemia is a great example of a commercial pils.
Okay.
It's got a great European hop note to it. It's got a good corn character to it. Yeah. It's got a lightness to it. It really sort of embodies the cap style, the Clara style.
Okay. All right. So that's good to have because I guess, that is the realm of homebrewers to really experiment and do whatever they want with their beer. But if they are doing things that can fit into, within a category so that they can be judged, it's good that we have those categories for
them. And therein you hit the entire competition idea on the head. The style guidelines do not limit creativity in any way. They don't stop a brewer from making anything they want or anything they like.
Okay.
What they do is define a target. They are essentially a standard for a brewer to brew to, a target for them to hit, and then it is evaluated by judges who basically say, this is how well you hit the target.
Yeah.
An awful lot goes into that. It also provides a common language for the two people to talk.
Okay.
It's saying, this is why this is different. If you go over to Europe, in England, our entire categorization of pale ales to them is absurd.
Yeah.
To them, it's pretty much cask, pale ale, and India pale ale is basically just another pale ale.
Yeah, okay.
They might have milds and they may say browns, but essentially it's all one kind of beer style to them.
Right.
And the important thing is we define those slightly differently so that the examples that we give kind of pinpoint flavor nuances. They also provide us with the ability to say, okay, I'm going to brew this slightly lighter, slightly heavier than one style or another,
yeah.
And it may fall into a whole other category.
Okay.
The important thing, if you are able to hit your targets with these styles and you get a pretty decent mark, then you know that you can hit anything that you want to brew dead nuts on.
Okay. Now, this is what I want to talk about. Let me take this call real first, but I don't want to leave this topic because this is it's really great that you're talking about these being targets for brewers because there's a lot of debate around that. Sean, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey. Are you guys there?
Yeah, we're here. Who's on?
It's Sean, Dan.
Oh.
Hello?
You sound weird.
Because I'm an architect.
Sean the architect on the phone with us.
No, I actually just called in. I didn't expect to talk to you, but I wanted to give Daniela a hard time because she wasn't at the CBS show today. I was wondering what was up with that.
Daniela, would you like to answer that, or would you like me to answer?
I would like you to answer.
I wouldn't allow her to leave the house, Sean.
Someone had to clean it.
The with the low CO2 drip going? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, exactly. The problem is with doing two shows in a day, especially when they're so close together, is the sort of organization around it. And someone needed to be here for Kevin, because we usually have our guests arrive early so that we can sort of get organized. Contrary to popular BN listener belief, there is some organization that goes on before the show.
I've seen it last year. It was awesome.
So Daniela had to actually remain behind faithfully to the Brewing Network to greet our guest today.
Yeah. During the ship.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well.
Is that acceptable, Sean the architect?
It's fine. I know. When we have a meeting next week, can we have a beer with us?
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
Thanks, brother.
All right. Take care. Good show, by the way.
Thank you. Sean O'Sullivan, co-hosted the FM show today, did a great job. I like it when he's on there doing that thing. He's a funny guy and good to have around. Okay. Back on track here, Kevin. You're mentioning the BJCP guidelines being a target, and I'm sure you know, and it's happened sort of often here at the Brewing Network, there's a wide gap between the people who say you have to brew to style and the people who say the proverbial F to style. And it's because as home brewers, a lot of people just feel like they need to brew whatever they want to brew. And the other line of thought says, how would you ever come up with new brews? How did the first pale ale ever come about anyway? If they were always brewing to style, and sometimes you have to think outside of that box. So I appreciate your description of the guidelines as a target to reach. But what I want to know is how then does that work when we turn in beers to competition? Because if it's not within the "quote unquote target," it's not going to do well in that category. Is that what happens?
Well, yeah. The short answer to what you say is yes.
Okay.
And if we were real slaves to absolute tradition, we would still be brewing with bog myrtle and dried fig.
Yeah,
which I do all the time, by the way.
That's true.
So we have to allow for creativity and additional parts to the style. The imperialist IPA style is an example of an emerging style. The American pale ale category is an example of an emerging style. The BJCP got started in about 1986 as a part of the AHA and was really sort of an offshoot of, well, we want to put these beers in competition, but how do we kind of judge them? I mean, we can say they're good or bad. And at the time, most of the feedback consisted of sanitation notes and, hey, try this new thing called liquid yeast.
Yeah. Brand new.
Yeah.
So homebrewing has evolved, and I'm really fortunate. I'm in an area where I can judge an awful lot of competitions.
Okay.
And I find, especially every year, my comments are a lot less about the flaws I find in the beer and a lot more about the things I like in a beer.
Okay.
And that's a really neat trend. I really like that.
Yeah.
But the style guidelines are essentially your target. You can't run a race unless you know the course.
Yeah.
And that's what they are. They are the course.
Yeah.
If you fall off the course, if you can't make it around the turns, somebody's going to tell you where you missed the bet, where you missed it.
Sure.
That's what the feedback is for. The feedback on the part of the judges is supposed to be about analyzing the beer from the standpoint of what is there.
Yeah.
Perhaps what isn't there and ought to be in style, or perhaps what isn't there and shouldn't be there, such as diacetyl and DMS.
Yeah.
That's a good notation for a brewer to know that, hey, yeah, I don't have any issues that way. Let them know there's no sanitation issues. That's good, strong reinforcement for what a brewer is doing.
Absolutely.
Then come along with, well, it's not quite got the definition of malt to style, or perhaps it's got a little more aggressive hop bite to it, a nice bitterness, but the texture's a little rough.
Okay.
Refinements that they can make. And isn't it great that we can get into the nuance of it instead of, well, there's an emerging sourness there, or perhaps there is a goaty flavor, or perhaps there's a vegetal flavor, and we're getting into fundamental basics about how to boil, how to sanitize. That gets awfully mundane for everybody involved. It's much more exciting to be talking about really, truly the best creative beers, the best interpretations of style winning, more so than just the cleanest beer wins.
Yeah. Absolutely. Look, I'm not a style Nazi, as they've been often called on this show, but that's the phrase that gets thrown around here. I definitely like pushing the envelope. I also enjoy that there are targets to be met. The other part of the explanation that you gave that I really like, and I think you're touching on that here when you're talking about being able to give people feedback, is that you said we've created a language so that we can communicate back and forth.
Yeah.
And everything needs that. Computers have that. To talk to each other, there's protocols. And you're absolutely right about that. And saying it that way actually makes it really clear to me right now that, yes, being able to talk back and forth with the same language allows us to improve our beer and really talk about what was right and what wasn't right and what issues are going on there. And
yeah, the guidelines are just a dictionary of terms that everyone can just kind of boil everything down to, no pun intended, I guess. And yeah, like you said, everyone who's been certified by the BJCP board is going to know the same stuff.
Yeah.
So you can communicate really well and dial it in, and in turn give good feedback. And I like what Kevin was saying about it's gotten kind of away from what's wrong and kind of more towards reinforcement about the parts that are right about a beer, which I know when I get feedback, that's what I look for. It's encouraging.
Right.
You know, instead of just getting all this negative stuff, getting beat down, it's more of a, hey, you're on the right track. Here's how to just kind of tweak it out and then, you know, try it again. See you next year. You know?
There's a uniqueness to how the BJCP judges compared to other things, judging horses, judging dogs, judging wine, judging anything else, it seems. We are pretty unique in that when we are judging, we reverse engineer what's going on. We sort of pick it apart and say, well, in the process or in the ingredients, this, this, and this could be better, could be different.
Yeah.
You'll never find a wine judge saying, well, it tastes pretty good, but your Pinot Noir is 45 degrees off on that hill, and you really need to replant.
Yeah, right. Although, how cool would that be?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, okay.
Why'd you use Pedro this year when you could have used Raul like last year, and it would have tasted much better?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's, and to a certain extent, that's... There is some absurdity to that because we are placed in a position of guessing what's going on. I've had some unbelievably outstanding beers and been blessed with the idea that people can actually contact me. I put my email address on every one of my score sheets.
Oh, that's great.
Specifically because brewers can then give me feedback on how good of a judge I've been.
Yeah.
Have I been helpful? Have I said something or done something that's left them either confused or pissed off? And get to me.
Yeah.
Talk to me about it. See why I said what I said.
Yeah.
I may not specifically remember that beer, and you'll have to remind me about it, because I may be... It may have been somewhere in the middle of a flight of 10 beers, of which I've done two. And by the time you get your score sheets, I may have done four other contests.
Absolutely.
But I'm still willing to talk about it, and every respectable judge is willing to talk about that.
And that's a great part of it. I've heard a lot of competitors say, actually, that, you definitely have your competitors who they don't care what the judge says. It's either win or lose, and
yeah,
I can't believe I didn't win.
Yeah.
So let's just go ahead and say that there are those out there.
What do you mean my baby's ugly?
Exactly. You're right. You're absolutely right. It's same thing. But I've definitely heard other competitors say, you know, the worst score sheets I get back are the ones that will score it low and don't say anything about why. There's no comments there about what was going on wrong. There's very little description. They gave me a low score. They said good beer and moved on. And that's and I agree with them. I've not competed. I'll be honest about that. But I would agree. You want to know why.
There's a lot of philosophies on how to judge. And here's really kind of the crux of it for most judges. A 25 is, it's a beer. There's nothing really terribly off about it. There's nothing really terribly exciting about it. Yeah, you pretty much hit the mark. Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's wet and carbonated.
It could use more refinement, and most judges will say so.
No, that's out of 50 points, right?
There's 25. There's nothing really offensive about it, and there's nothing really exciting about it. It's just kind of there.
Yeah.
Start moving up that scale. With a lot of judges, past about a 36 or 38 on that 50-point scale, the points become almost logarithmically difficult to get and to award. And okay. So if you've really been given a 38 to a 40, you've been given an outstanding score, you've been given an excellent score by our standards.
Okay.
Outstanding being 44 and above, I believe.
Okay.
And I've only awarded maybe two or three of those in my life.
Have you ever awarded a 50?
No.
Never?
Never.
Is that sort of the elusive, like, Moby Dick? Everyone's looking
the white whale?
Everyone's looking for the 50?
I've never found a commercial example I would give a 50 to.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's tough.
It's there, and it's obtainable, but it's not in some respect.
I got a couple of questions from our listeners for you, and then I'm going to play devil's advocate for just a second. But first, what category of beer would you put Samuel Adams Boston Lager into? This listener has one like it and sees no BJCP category for it specifically. So what about a Boston Lager?
It's an excellent example of brewer creativity. It's an excellent example of why the style guidelines have evolved and gone through an awful lot of revisions.
Okay.
There are a lot of really good styles out there, a lot of really good beers out there that are not available either nationwide or worldwide now. We now have judges in Australia and in South Africa, and we have one judge in Belgium and one in Europe somewhere. And the reality is not everybody can get their hands on these kinds of styles.
Yeah.
The other thing is that the style guidelines try to avoid an archetype style example. There's only a couple of categories where an archetype is really the only thing we can do. California Common being one, with Anchor Steam being the archetypical example of the style.
Yeah.
Perhaps the other is Rochbier, where we look at Schlenkerla or something as the archetypical example of what a German-style smoked beer ought to be.
Yeah, okay.
But if you really investigate it, they're smoking just about every beer they can get their hands on. They've got smoked wheat, smoked pilsners, smoked Märzens, which is the archetypical example,
okay.
Smoked Viennas. So Sam Adams is a unique beer in its own. It really kind of is a brown ale done as a lager, so it winds up being somewhat of a hybrid.
Okay. So if you were going to enter it, what category would you enter it in if you had a Sam Adams clone? Can you think of any of them that they would have? Isn't there one that's a very broad one?
Is it the hybrids? Is it category
it's the hybrid
six,
category.
Well, hybrids is pretty broad, but hybrids generally means that you're doing something slightly different, such as using lager yeast at ale temperature with California Common, or using an ale yeast and then cold conditioning it, such as Alt and Kolsch.
Okay.
So you'd have to do something slightly different. It pretty much qualifies as an American dark lager.
Okay.
It's just malty for style.
Okay. Well, perfect. Actually, yeah.
And that's in my judgment.
All right. Fair enough. Okay.
Well, we'll go with that because you're the expert here.
Another listener question. Are there any suggestions for learning what my beer fits into? I can't, let's see. I can taste things the way that they are, but not sure how to figure out what category to put it into.
Sure. If you think it follows into a particular category, go out and get yourself commercial examples as found in the style guideline and taste your beer side by side with it. Preferably, you can get two or three good commercial examples. Make sure they're in fresh shape. And I've generally found that the people at, and I don't know if you have a plug-o-meter here, an unintentional
plug. You're okay. Go right ahead.
But BevMo generally has, they actually have people who are beer experts on their staff who are actually doing the purchasing, and I've found that they do a pretty good job of trying to keep real fresh beer on there, trying to get good rotation on their shelves, and taking care of that beer. get those examples, and then try to have a blind tasting where somebody else is pouring your beer versus those beers, and you can't tell which one's which.
Yeah.
Score it yourself. You may really surprise yourself with your own beer. The other way is to do a trio tasting where you pour, again, blind, two of one kind of beer, one of another kind of beer, and you score all three, and you may find that you score the two that are identical quite differently.
Hmm. Okay.
What helps me with that also in trying to enter, you know, a competition is going on to the website, the BJCP.org, and it has all the style guidelines right there, and you can download them. And find the category it's in, and you sit and you taste it and maybe have someone with you and just kind of break everything down.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like what Kevin was saying, and just judge it for yourself. But I find if I'm reading it while I'm going through the motions and while I'm experiencing it, it helps me to break down what it is and then have a visual reference and then kind of, you know, say, okay, well, that's the 16A or whatever it's going to be.
Sure. There's a master judge I know who looks at the style guidelines and just says they're just flavor frames.
Okay.
They are just a frame that to which your beer may or may not float into.
Okay. All right, I want to come back to that in a sec. A couple other questions here. Have you ever, so I asked you if you ever gave a 50. You ever given a 5? You ever gone so low to give just a real low score listener wants to know?
No, that's... What's important is pretty much if it's carbonated. The worst score I ever gave was an unintentional entry where a brewer was probably made themselves their own beverage just to taste, you know, to have while they were brewing. Hmm. And it somehow got mixed up with their entries. It was actually the brewer's own iced tea sent to us. And it came to us in the Pilsner category.
An iced tea.
So it was flat and tea-like.
Yeah.
Amber in color, not golden. And we were thrilled to see a fly fall out.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Great.
And what score did you give that?
It wound up with about a 13.
How could you do? Why didn't you just say, listen, don't send us this stuff? This is
well, we pretty much did, but, you know.
Recap just, and send it back.
Well, we noted it had good clarity.
Now you're just messing with
it.
Come on,
it had clean flavors. It had no sourness. It had no diacetyl, no DMS. We, you know,
okay.
Pretty much the bottom score that a judge is going to give is about a 13, because quite frankly, if it's carbonated, it's in the bottle, and the top got on it, it's about a 13.
You get points for those things.
There is a bottle inspection part of it, and that bottle inspection does, when properly done, does include looking at the cap.
Uh-huh.
Looking for rust spots, looking for distortions in the cap,
okay.
Looking for bottle type, looking for fill level, looking for clarity within the bottle, looking for that proverbial ring in the neck that could indicate a sanitation issue.
Okay. That's good to know, actually.
And, you know, there are beers, and in commercial competitions, there are beers I'll come across with a panel of amateurs. In commercial competitions, we don't write scores the way we write feedback sheets the way we write them for homebrew competitions. And if one passes by and it has an offensive aroma, I will tell the rest of the panel that, you know, we are not under any obligation to taste this. We can simply score it on the aroma alone.
Ah.
That is very wine-like. That is very much the way a lot of other disciplines judge things. It starts with aroma, and if it doesn't pass that, they're not going to put it in their mouth.
Interesting.
In homebrewing, we're under obligation to give it at least a courtesy taste and confirm what we found with the aromas or not. I've had beers that have had offensive aromas or had something going on that didn't really transfer to the flavor, not nearly as strongly as I expected.
Okay.
And others that had the most pleasant aroma, and then once I tasted it, something went horribly wrong.
Yeah, okay. Sure. It makes sense, doesn't it? Anything could happen there. You could certainly mask a lot of things with a nice aroma.
Oh, sure.
And then your palate tells a whole different story.
Well, it's kind of neat because basically you'll judge anything, you know, within a reason. So, I mean, if they entered it in a Pilsner category like the iced tea, you're going to judge it like they meant for it to be in the Pilsner. You're not going to make any assumptions on the brewer, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
We will brew as presented, or brew, I'm sorry, we will judge as presented to us by the brewer. It is incumbent upon the brewer to accurately label and mark their own beers. It is incumbent upon the brewer to make an interpretation of style. It is not unusual for a brewer to say, well, it's kind of like this and it's kind of like that, and enter the same beer in two categories.
Right.
It is not uncommon for a brewer to get distracted while boxing up their entries, and maybe a label ends up on the wrong bottle somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and that bottle ends up on our table. we're not going to go back. We might ask the if it's a blatant, obvious thing. We're in barley
like
wine.
Like a stout in a pils?
Kind of like a stout in a pils, or I was going to say a pilsner in the barley wine category.
Yeah, okay.
We will go back to the organizer and ask, is this correct?
Yeah.
And they will check, and it's incumbent upon them to accurately take in and log all of the beers.
Right.
And they will come back with an affirmative or a negative. And I have received emails from somebody going, yeah, you're right, it was completely out of category because I just broke up with my girlfriend. She went out to the garage when I wasn't looking and moved some bottles around.
Screw this guy.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
He's
going to
lose this competition.
Uh-huh. Like he lost me.
Bastard.
Yeah.
So anything can happen. But, you know, this is a hobby. People do this for fun. People do this because it's their spare time. And as a judge, we need to respect that part of it and go with what they enter as if they meant it. And if it doesn't fit, it doesn't fit, and we say so.
Okay.
We've had, in just a recent competition that I did with you, we ended up having a beer that was an outstanding Berliner Weizen.
Mm-hmm.
An outstanding Berliner Weizen. It would have probably scored 15, 20 points higher than it did, but the brewer entered it as an American.
I see.
American wheat. It tripped me out. We were doing the wheat beers and had a real nice aroma, real, you know, just kind of like all the other ones. And you kind of taste it, and it's just this tart. And it threw me, it kind of jumped back a little bit.
But it wasn't a sourness that was offensive. It was bright. It
was good.
Lemony. It was wonderful. It was refreshing. It just lightened up the body enough. You know, I could wax on a lot about this. And this would have been probably a 38-point beer.
Okay.
As it was. We wound up with a somewhere in the low 20s because,
category.
compared to what the target was you were shooting at, you hit the neighbor's house.
Right. Okay. Well, these things are bringing up a lot of questions for me as well.
Yeah.
And we're going to take a break first. There's a few things I want to get into. One of them, and I'm gonna warn you here, people can tend to get a little emotional about this topic, about whether things should be stylized and whether or not they're subjective and that whole thing. And I'm going to ask you about that when we come back, because I do want to talk about the subjectiveness of judging and how that kind of falls into play here. I definitely think it's a valid topic to talk about. The other thing I want to talk about is actually organizing one of these competitions from the ground up, you know, really getting it together, getting you judges in there, how many flights you might have to taste in one competition. All sorts of things like that I think people are very concerned about when entering competitions. Let's try to dispel some of these myths about what's happening in the judging. The other thing we can talk about is what makes a judge. I know that there's a lot of different categories of judges, and there's different certifications, a lot like ranks in the military.
Yeah, and you got mine wrong so far. But
I got yours so far wrong. So didn't I just say, if I just say BJCP judge, that's wrong? I have to add a qualifier to that.
Well, there are ranks, there's stratification within it that denote your ability and your experience.
So to be correct, I would have had to say a BJCP national judge.
Correct.
That would have been correct. And then there's also a BJCP master judge. Is there like a BJCP Grand Poobah or something like that?
As a matter of fact, we have a Grand Poobah.
You have a Grand Poobah. Is it Jamil?
No. Jamil is wonderful, and Jamil contributes a ton. You know, there's really not a bad thing I'd say about it. We are peers in that way. We hold the same rank.
Beautiful.
We've never judged together on a panel, but we've judged at the same competitions, and we tend to get split on different panels. Mm-hmm. We have judged best of show together.
Oh, cool.
And I think we have reasonably similar palates. I can't tell until we judge on a panel sometime.
Who's the Grand Poobah?
There's a guy named Gordon Strong who's virtually everywhere, and he is a Grandmaster Level 3.
Okay.
He has 12 highest, dexterity points.
He has black belt.
Which is about the highest, you can be.
He's the man.
And he is now our BJCP president. He is on every committee. He writes for Zymergy. He is on the AHA board, I believe. And apparently he's married and has a family, although I'm not sure they know who he is anymore.
That's
but he has traveled all over the world. He's just a really neat beer geeky guy. He's
okay.
A great guy.
Well, he sounds like a future guest for us, that's for sure. All right, very good. So when we come back, we're going to talk about these kind of things, the ins and outs of judging, whether you guys believe in it or not. I think it's a valid thing that we have going on here with the BJCP, and we're going to get into the ins and outs of that, get your questions answered. Join us in the chat room. It's the Brewing Network.
You're listening to the Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
listening to Three Guys.
Excuse me, what about me?
Sorry. You're listening to Three Guys and One Girl. Use a radio show as an excuse to drink more beer. The Brewcasters
on the Brewing Network.
All right, we're back on the Brewcast with Kevin Pratt, BJCP National Certified Judge.
You did a good job. I saw him beating you in the other room.
I got to make sure we get that right because there are distinctions, and going through the whole program of how you become certified, there's distinctions of how certified you actually are. We'll get into those in a little bit. As well.
We have one listener here in the chat room. His name is Daryl. Mm-hmm. He sent us a beer last night for the Oktoberfest show to be tried by us and tasted.
Uh-huh.
And you guys didn't say too many bad things, but he ended it in a competition later on. He scored a 13.
Oh.
He wanted to me to pass his sincere apology.
For us to have to drink it. That was he sent it in for the Oktoberfest show we did a while back.
Yeah, I don't recall it. I probably didn't try it. But
so it made it into the bottle.
Yeah, with the cap on it, and it got laid.
And we didn't say a lot of bad things about it?
Well, we didn't say a whole lot of things about it, I think. He said, I don't think they liked it too much, but they didn't rip it apart either. But
yeah, we have to walk a fine line here sometimes,
right.
Because we're not behind the Iron Curtain judging these things.
Right.
And people, at their own will, send them in to us. And what we try to do is be real constructive, though, about what's going on. We don't tell any lies.
He's also just saying that apparently it was a very good drinking beer, just not an Oktoberfest beer.
Yeah.
So maybe it just didn't fit the style.
Okay. All right. Before we get into the sort of controversial aspects of BJCP judging, a question came through from a listener talking about using different ingredients in a beer, as a matter of fact. If you use an ale yeast to brew a pilsner, can you still call it a pilsner? And I guess that would be in terms of judging in a competition.
Sure, why not?
Yeah? Is it likely then that it won't taste like
You can call it anything you want. And it's really important. If it comes to us and you call it something like that, we're going to go out of our way to try to find the attributes of it that exist in that style.
Okay.
And an awful lot of judges will get a flavor frame in their head about what they expect to find in a beer, and lo and behold, they find it. The other thing, and we were remarking about this again with another master judge about this, is that there are times when there's a real trend in what we are judging across an entire flight. And it seems like every single beer seems to have the same sort of generalized esters or the same sort of generalized profile and such. There can be real technical reasons for that, such as they've all come from essentially a kit from the same shop, or they're all following a recipe that was published in one of the magazines. But other times, it can just be the judge's perceptions.
Okay.
We just kind of get it in your head, the brain gets a framework in its head, and then the brain ends up finding what it expects to be there. Mm. That's just human foible.
Okay. And that's part of the controversy behind it about the subjectiveness of beer judging as well. It is no matter how you look at it, and it's similar in some ways to asking a movie critic. While they may be a professional and they may have guidelines and they may have gone to film school, when you ask them to judge a movie and evaluate it for you, it may be very different than the critic sitting next to them.
Right.
And so, no matter how much training you have, there's certainly going to be some discrepancy there. Let me start, I guess, that discussion with a couple of questions I got from listeners. And these two questions are very similar, so I'll just kind of do one of them. And it basically asks, if you can't give a perfect score, and you've said that you've not even given a perfect score to a commercial beer. How valid, then, is the category? Some commercial beers will hit styles. And if they can't be properly rewarded, then what's the point?
The style represents a range. It doesn't represent an archetype.
Okay.
If it represented an archetype, then you would be brewing clones of that beer, and we'd be judging you as to how closely you hit a clone. That's not how it's judged. So we have to understand that there are lighter and there are bigger versions of a style. A good judge will do that routinely, mm-hmm. and a good judge will accept that. However, balance comes into play, how well the ingredients meld together, how well it was executed, how well that interpretation is understood right away. Context. So, again, it comes back to the style guidelines become a language to put the evaluation into context.
Yeah.
While it may say that fruity esters are just fine, and that examples can be from light malt to caramelly, and that hopping can range from reasonably light to aggressive,
yeah,
it does not mean that a very estery beer with light malt and aggressive hop is a good example of style. It's not necessarily balanced to whatever that fictitious style is or just made up.
Okay.
Whereas if you're going to be light on malt, lighter on hops, excellent. But don't have the esters, perhaps. That may make a better balance to the style. And the other thing is tongues aren't interchangeable.
Yeah.
I got to bring mine to every competition.
Sure.
And somebody when it's else. Not wagging around, it's trying to taste some beers. And each week, my palate may be slightly different.
Sure.
Things happen to a beer in time. The beer may be plus or minus a few degrees each time it's served.
Yeah.
It may follow another beer in competition, and even though we are to judge each beer on its own,
sure,
invariably, palate carryover happens.
Yeah.
Phenols is one of the classic examples of that. Medicinal phenols, and even spicy phenols, but especially the medicinal phenols, act an awful lot like capsicum and lock into the taste buds themselves.
Okay.
And it is real easy to suddenly taste phenol in the next two or three beers.
Yeah.
That's why it's important for a good judge to have plenty of bread, plenty of water to cleanse the palate, and the bread more so for than just chewing, but actually rubbing around with the tongue and scraping the tongue, essentially, with the bread, using plenty of water to wash that all away, and perhaps even maintaining a little bit of a calibration beer or a particularly good example that you may have had up to that point as kind of a recalibrator. Taste that beer again and, hey, if I'm getting phenol, okay, it's on my tongue. I can either re-clean my tongue,
yeah,
or go with the fact that, okay, I'm going to find that phenol in the next beer, and so I'm just going to discount it.
Right.
That's a judgment call that the judge has to make as they go.
Yeah. Now, see, I like your openness about that subjectivity because it's obvious. I mean, let's just face it. You're not a machine. You're not a robot tasting things. There's not a printout that's going to shoot out your ass as you're tasting these things. It'll tell you every little part of the beer.
Oh, that would be nice.
So, it's true that, you know, maybe one day your palate isn't the same as it was the week before, and certainly different beers can change it too. In saying all of that, I truly think that that's no reason to discredit the guidelines and
absolutely
entering
not
competitions, because I it still gives us, like you said, a language to talk about, you know, amongst ourselves.
There's enough beers in the world to make everybody happy. There's enough styles in the world. There's enough things you can do with our four ingredients that you can't do with any other beverage to make everybody make something they like. And in that way, every beer is unique.
Yeah.
Every beer is essentially its own style.
Yeah.
That case can be made. But we're talking about a context of competition. It's a different way I evaluate beer in competition than I would evaluate it if I came to your homebrew club. It's a different way if I came to your house. I am not going to take your homebrew beer at your house and start ripping it apart.
Yeah.
I may ask you questions if you're open to it.
Sure. And not everybody is.
Not everybody is. And you know, oftentimes, what's the first thing that a homebrewer does when they hand you a beer? Apologize.
Yeah.
It's not quite what I expected. It's probably not the best thing you've ever had. It's probably the... Come on, just hand me the beer.
Yeah, just have it.
Give it to me already.
Yeah. You know, actually, and I got to say that that's a great point in speech courses and communication courses. They'll tell you the same thing. You got to do a lot of public speaking, and everybody, that's one of the first thing everybody does. They get up there, and right before they give their speech, you say something like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't feel so well today. Oh, I'm sorry this, I'm sorry that. And the first thing they teach you is, don't apologize for yourself. It's one right. of the worst things you can do, and it's a terrible first impression. And it does start sort of things in the mind already that take away from, in this case, the beer itself.
Right.
You know, I do have a question about this now, but getting back to the perfect style. There are certain commercial examples where that particular commercial brewery invented the style. Let's take Pilsner Urquell, for example. That's Pilsner. It is the Pilsner. It began the entire thing. So I'm wondering if served and stored properly, a fresh Pilsner or Kel wouldn't deserve a 50. If that's the original, like, if you want to go by a style and you want to hit a target, that's the target.
That's the one, right?
So wouldn't you give a Pilsner or Kel, if all things being the same, like I said, fresh, served properly, would you not give that a 50 in the Pilsner category?
Well, in the sort of ethereal dream world you just set out, sure.
Okay.
The fact is, does it ever actually happen? Is it actually handled properly by the time it comes from Czechoslovakia across 1, 2, 3 continents to get here?
No. But
and
if you had it
and
there,
an ocean,
sure.
And customs, and through a couple of distributors, trucked across the U.S., and then finally into my store where I may buy it, leave it in my car for a while, and then finally take it inside.
Absolutely,
Is it going to be the same?
But no, and it obviously won't be. But if you were on the brewery tour at Pilsner Urquell, and they, at the end of the tour they served you a Pils, I guess I'm only asking because it was interesting that you said I'd never even given a commercial example of 50, so it just really kind of brought that to mind. If you were on the brewery tour at Pilsner Urquell, I'm wondering if you'd give it a 50, you know?
Well, as soon as you give me my ticket,
I know. You give back to me. Because, you know, Jamil's done the same. It's going to be a good question for Jamil because he's done the touring around over there, yeah, and gone directly to the places. And
it's a world traveler.
It would have to be one of the places. My qualifier here is that it has to be one of the places that invented the style. That, like,
sure,
that's the marker.
Well,
I mean, even like Guinness. Anchorsteam, right? So Anchorsteam, you could have right here.
Yeah.
Not only did they actually have a patent on the damn
thing, yeah, they do.
On the process that brews the style. And I'm wondering, and if that then in the steam bear category, if you had an anchor fresh out of the fermenter, or rather out of the tap, if it would get a 50, if it would deserve a 50.
The theory is there's a magic point at which a beer is absolutely perfect.
Okay.
The answer to your question is if everything absolutely lined up.
Okay.
For that brief moment in time, yep.
Kevin, don't take away my dream world from me. I don't know what I'll do.
Well, I think also if they take that steam beer, right, and they say, I want to make this a category, which leads me to my other question. If they take it and they say, okay, here's a steam beer, let's make this a category, California Common or whatever.
Which was the name given to us by Fritz.
Okay, yeah.
Gotcha. That was when he said you were allowed to use that.
Well,
because they have a patent on steam.
There's some historical significance as to why he chose that name.
Okay.
Common beer was a beer that was essentially a table beer. It was not for anything much more than just basic drinking.
Yeah.
And in that way, his beer is designed to be unpretentious. It's designed to just be what it is.
Yeah, okay.
It is probably the very first beer I ever had about the time I was 21.
like we all do.
One of the first beers I ever had where I realized beer could be so much more than soda pop.
Yeah.
Grew up in San Jose, right down the street, had it at a pizza parlor, had it with a bunch of friends, first time having it. Mm. It couldn't have been better in my flavor memory than I can possibly think. And, quite frankly, the experience of having it since then has never quite lived up to that particular magic
it's
moment.
Like shooting up.
The first time's always the
first
the best.
Time is the best in my vein.
Thank you, JP.
You're welcome. But, like I was saying, they would take that style if they want to build it, and this is my opinion. Maybe Kevin can tell me if I'm wrong, which I probably am. And they would say, okay, we want to make this a category, knowing that brewers are going to make it either a little less than or a little more than, they give it a parameter.
Yeah.
So you're never going to get, steam beer, I would imagine, would hit right in the middle of the category.
Well, we're watching the evolution of that right now. The evolution of that exact, what you're talking about, is happening with the American Imperialist IPA.
Yeah, and that's my question. How do you style guidelines?
It was a name, the name Imperial IPA was given to it by the people that invented it. A couple of breweries, and it's a little murky as to who actually came out with it first, but generally there's three breweries that are attributed with it, with all pretty much deciding to have a hop orgy inside of a glass. And
sounds good to me.
On principle of it, the idea of simply making something that is so hop forward and so giant and so huge and alcoholic is really very American in terms of creating the SUV of beers.
Mm-hmm.
But now comes the next question. Is it supposed to just be an exercise in hops with all of that acidity, that hop tannic, that hop phenolic that can come from that? Or is there supposed to be some complexity, some maturity, some sort of definition there that gives it a framework? And I happen to fall into the category of the latter. And I'm looking for that complexity. I'm looking for that malt backbone, and I'm looking for the hop flavor, the hop aroma, and the hop bitterness to be aggressive but not beating me up.
So is this how guidelines change and evolve and new categories come about? Is just what, like, the pulse of the home brewer basically
precisely,
is doing?
Precisely. Baltic Porter is another example. Right now, at the risk of ruining a great thing, Baltic Porter is about the best value there is in commercial beer at about $2 a bottle.
Mm.
You know, or $1.35 a bottle.
Let's go to the store.
Yeah.
And it's a great beer style, and it was totally unrecognized, and it was largely the work of one or two people on the committee with these current guidelines who recognized this is an emerging style, this is now available to us with the fall of communism, and it's worth examining in its own right. It's not a porter per se, but it is in that family, and it is brewed to sort of an imperial standard, and if imperial simply means bigger, more alcoholic, and more oomph. And it's an outstanding style, and it's highly it exists mostly in the realm of commercial beers right now and not very much in homebrewers. It hasn't quite hit the radar yet, but it is a style that's available.
Okay. All right, last question on this sort of subjective and point system thing, and then we'll move on to how you become a BJCP judge, because that's some real meat and potatoes that I want to get into there, too. This is a listener question that just offers a suggestion saying maybe it seems that if a judge can't come up with any improvements on the beer, if they can't write anything on the sheet to improve the beer, then should it be a 50? It's a good question. I like the question from the listener because it is an interesting guideline.
I'd like to try the beer in question.
Okay. So have you never judged something that you couldn't say it needs some, you know, suggest a couple improvements then?
Well, in this next segment, we're going to get into judges and judge evolution, and there were certainly beers early on in my career that I couldn't fully describe because I just didn't have the vocabulary and I didn't have the experience to fully describe it.
Mm-hmm.
But it did not strike me necessarily as being a beer that was spot on to what I was looking for in the style or to what I thought was within the range of style.
Okay.
You know, my palate did not develop overnight. Every year I work on it. Every year I go back to my George Fix books. Every year I go, you know, now I go back through designing great beers.
Mm.
Every year I go out and try to taste commercial examples that I haven't had. This particular year I have been doing an awful lot of specialty judging and fruit beer judging and odd styles because those are the ones that generally are the realm of the newest judges because they're not that desirable.
Yeah, okay.
Because you don't know what you're going to get.
It's got to be tough to judge.
And there's no
too.
Chocolate, you know. So I mean, it just you know, there's nothing. They can be pretty bizarre.
Yeah.
But it was in doing that this year that I came across one of only three beers I've ever given over a 45.
Okay.
I came across a 46.
Wow.
And this particular beer has may do very very well. And I'm not going to describe it because it's still in play in the same competition. So,
did you mark improvements that could be made in giving it a 46?
There weren't really any improvements to be made.
Okay.
To what it was. The brewer chose a very, very obscure beer to clone. They chose, it's a very rare beer, they chose to not only just clone this beer, which is pretty magic by itself, but to make improvements upon it with wood aging and a little bit of spice. And to my amazement, that improved the beer, not detracted from it.
Okay.
Were there things I'd like to see different about that beer? Not really. Were there things I could comment about it that said, you know, this is what's happening. This is where the balance is. This is where, you know, things are kind of going here and there. That made up that little magic 4 points? Yeah, I did.
Okay.
And the brewer emailed me and said, thanks. I was really, really worried that this was going to be misunderstood.
Yeah.
And I can only hope that as it moves forward, it is not misunderstood because it's an outstanding beer.
Right.
I had another beer in the same competition that was a dead knockoff of Pliny the Elder.
Beautiful.
Dead on.
Wow. That's a good...
That's a hard one, too.
Yeah. Nice work. Okay.
And Pliny is one of my archetype examples of that particular style of the double IPA, or as I'm calling it now, the Imperialist IPA, because it's distinctly American.
Yes.
And it didn't require any improvement for what it was. But as a style, as things are, as balance is, there are things that are inherently wrong with that particular style that are going to bring down that particular beer. And it's not going to make it fail on its face. It's just not going to be necessarily a 50. And there really isn't, you know, in many people's minds, there isn't a 50-point beer. I don't know if I fully believe that. I just believe I haven't come across it yet.
Okay.
Well, what kind of things would, if it's a dead knockoff for a style like that, what kind of things would make up like an extra 4 points? You know, what kind of things would detract from that that wouldn't allow it to go that extra step?
Well, in this
case, talking about balance.
In this case,
like
the beer got for me, I think, a 40 or 41.
Okay.
And what would have made it? There's a magic factor, and in fact, in the judging instructions. You know, it says that outstanding, the range is reserved for those beers that are not only lacking flaws, but also have a great character and that hard to define magic great, that sort of magic that great beers have.
Yeah.
And this beer had some of that magic, and sometimes maybe the beer served me a little warm or a little cold. You know, maybe it's not exactly the right temperature.
Sure.
Maybe there's, and oftentimes competitions are in restaurants, and maybe there's other aromas going on.
Hmm.
That's difficult. You really have to concentrate as a judge to get through that, and that's, a lot of judges don't have the patience to do that, and quite frankly, we do have time constraints when we judge. We have to get this done in a reasonable time.
Sure. Can't just sit there savoring every single one that you have, and
sometimes that's a good thing. I think too.
That's why I could never.
And in
be
this
a
case,
judge.
The, you know, in the case of the Pliny, there was a little haze issue. There was a little bit of excess sediment in the bottle. There was a little, you know, there were a couple of things.
Little
that,
things.
That could
okay.
have been ticks.
Yeah. All.
Okay. Why don't we do this? Let's move on to how you become a BJCP certified judge, and then, of course, move up the ranks. And then after that, we'll take a little break, and when we come back, we'll start doing some judging.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of homebrew here, and we'll actually judge it. We've got the judge instructions that Kevin was just reading from. We'll talk about those. I've got an actual score sheet, and we'll go through together and kind of do that for you folks at home. But first of all, what is the road to becoming a BJCP judge?
Study.
Yeah?
Typically, again, it is usually an add-on to a brewer part of his hobby. So most of the people that become judges already have a foundation in brewing. They have been brewing typically for a couple of years, and they're looking for ways to get better. It starts with preparing yourself, and there's several ways in which it can happen. There is a study guide available on the BJCP website that will direct you in understanding flavors, aromas, judging philosophy, and begin to help you understand ingredients, help you understand a little bit of beer archaeology, as in origins and history of style and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Bottom line, there's a test. It is a 3-hour-long, 10-question test.
Okay.
That is the written. And then there is a tasting portion of the test in which you have to evaluate 4 beers during this time and write your score sheets on it.
Are they commercial beers?
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
They are presented to you as style. They may or may not be in style. They may or may not be flawed.
Okay.
They may be intentionally flawed.
Mm-hmm.
There is a group of people that are called proctors that are tasting those beers, and those proctors are extremely important because they are the only way in which the graders know what the beers really tasted like.
Okay.
So it's very important that they are complete. It's very important that they look to be as perceptive as possible, because if the panel of people find a particular flaw and the proctors don't, we kind of got to side with the panel with the people taking the test, that they can't all be wrong.
Yeah.
And that puts some doubt in what the proctors are actually doing. It makes grading the test much more difficult.
Okay.
Much more subjective. The 10 questions are essay at this point, although 30% of the test is going to be an alternative format, which is still being formed. It's been a very long process. We take this test very seriously.
Okay.
An awful lot of people have compared it to taking the bar exam in terms of the intensity of study, in terms of the pressure that's put on
wow.
it, in terms of how much really they wish they could put on the page but just couldn't.
See, that puts me off a little because I want to be, I want the credibility that comes along with that amount of study and knowing, you know, what you're doing.
Yeah.
But I'm so done taking tests, Kevin. You see what I'm saying here? Like, the idea of, here's the words that totally threw me off. 10 questions. 3 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was like back at university and sweating and hungover, by the way.
Yeah.
And just going, man, are you kidding me?
Well, then it becomes something that you have to take into account when you are reading a judge's comments and
yeah.
they have rank.
You're right.
You need to realize that they did spend an awful lot of time doing something you aren't willing to do.
Excellent point. Yeah. And knowing they just that amount of time that they
yeah.
spent, not just the test, obviously,
no.
but to be able to write you know, essays on 10 questions and,
yeah.
and then evaluate those beers. They put in their time.
Because you also, with each style, correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, but they also ask you for commercial examples of that style. And you don't know what it's going to be on the test. I think there's a few different versions, like the DMV test or whatever. So
there,
not only do you
actually
have to know
it's,
that.
It's even more so than that. The exam directors literally write custom tests for
really?
Each region. I don't believe that of there's a question pool. So this is one important part to what it is. There is a question pool, and that question pool is public. That question pool is available for you to look at.
You can get it online, right?
Yeah. And it's in several variations going all the way back probably 15 years.
Okay.
Some of those questions are no longer in the pool. The new style guidelines did not necessarily mean a rewrite of the question pool. They don't mean that suddenly that same information on why you boil wort is suddenly different.
Okay.
They don't mean when you describe diacetyl that it's any different. So the question breaks down as this. There are five style questions, and they're generally grouped as families. They may have certain things in common, and those things in common may be they all come from the same sort of style guidelines. Describe and differentiate American brown ale, Southern English brown ale, and Northern English brown ale.
Okay.
Couldn't do it.
And
I'm out.
Yeah.
It may then be compared to all three beers of a similar color. Describe and differentiate American pale ale, Pilsner, and Kolsch. You know, what makes them similar? Color. What makes them different? Maybe the hop types. Maybe the treatment. In this case, the chief difference between those three would be the yeast treatment. American Pale Ale is an ale. It's fermented at warm temperatures. Pilsner is a lager. It's fermented at cooler temperatures. And Kolsch is ale, which is allowed to condition cool.
Right.
So that's you've now differentiated the three beers.
I could have answered that question, JP. How about that?
You're judging my
book. I'm on the road.
You are.
And so it's, you know, that's five of the questions. There's a question on geography, such as where beers originate from.
Daniela, could you answer that?
Pretty common. Well, you know, if you're asked what beer originates in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mine.
Yeah. You know, you'd be hard-pressed to come up with, you know,
sure.
something like that.
2-1-8 watermelon wheat.
To miss the fact that Anchor comes from San Francisco. You know, there are ones that come up that people classically miss, and there are others, you know, Kolsch comes from Cologne, and if, you know, Cologne were on there, you just have to describe Cologne a little bit, or describe Kolsch a little bit. So, you know, there is one geography question. There's a technical question and a troubleshooting question that basically have to do with beer flaws, and they're all common flaws, and the study references are very common and very easy to find. The 1980s Zymergy Troubleshooting Guide is a very popular reference because it is very accurate and well-written and fun to read
mm-hmm.
and describes almost all of the major beer flaws.
Okay.
Just reading the beer score sheet down the left-hand side is going to give you an awfully good thumbnail sketch of flaws and things that you may find in a beer.
And I'll read those to you when we do some judging later as Kevin's kind of doing his thing. So
you take the test, and it's just essay and right now. And I think the new format is being implemented in phases, and they've started with a new phase for question one, which never changes. That's one that you can count on. And that question is, describe the purpose of the BJCP, describe how and who the ranks are, and describe five reasons to boil wort.
Okay.
Wow.
Five reasons to boil wort.
I can think of two.
To get drunk.
eventually.
It's down the road, Kevin. Work with me here.
I certainly would laugh at something like that, but I'm not sure I'd score it.
Kevin, you want to come over and get drunk? I got some wort boiling. It would be awesome.
No, but you know the reasons to boil wort.
Yes.
It's obvious. You stop enzymatic activity. You may be deepening color of certain styles. You isomerize hops. You are coagulating proteins that are in that beer.
Yeah. Oh, I'm with you. I got those.
I would have gotten like
Driving off volatiles like DMS. You're driving off harsh hop compounds.
You're making the house smell wonderful.
That's funny.
There you go.
You're driving your wife.
Come
out
on,
of
you
the
give
house.
Me a score for that answer.
I will take that one as the secret sixth reason.
Yeah, there you go. You found it. You did a great job.
Of course. Okay, so you take your 3-hour written test. You take your tasting test. Assuming, what do you have to score? What are the ranges of scores on the essay test?
Okay, this goes along with rank. If you score a 60% or above, you have passed. Simply to take the test, even if you fail, you become a novice judge, and as a novice judge, you are, or apprentice rather, I'm sorry, as an apprentice judge, your points get recorded and you are on the judge roster for future BJCP events.
Okay.
After that is recognized, which is a 60% score minimum, that's passing.
Okay.
After that is certified level, which requires some experience points in addition to passing at a 70-point level.
Okay.
The next level up is national, and that requires more experience points plus passing at an 80% or better.
A B.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is master, which requires passing at a 90% level. And still more experience points.
Okay.
Experience points are points that you gain by actually judging competitions.
Okay.
So even if a person gets a 90 on their first time out, they are not yet a master judge until they have gathered 40 experience points.
Okay.
And those can be gathered chiefly by judging. They can also be gathered by organizing competitions and by stewarding competitions and staffing competitions.
I think you should get points for doing our show. You get like half a point, right? Come on, something.
That's right.
Because you have to sit here and they say that if you don't know anything until you can explain it to somebody else. And you're sitting here having to do that.
Yeah, we'll work on endurance points.
Something. Come on.
Roll 12-sided die for them.
So a person can pass at a 90, but until they reach the requisite points, they have the lower rank. They start off as recognized.
Okay.
Then they move to certified.
Okay.
With 5 points, they become certified. And with 20 points, they become national.
Okay.
With 40 points, they become master. To move into grandmaster requires other things besides experience points. And it's pretty lofty. And it requires being able to grade or grading exams. It requires service to the BJCP itself. This is getting to an area where not a lot of people either care to go there or do go there. The way it breaks down is the bulk of our membership is in the certified and recognized area. And for me, statistically, I kind of lump the two together because most people in the certified range may be working their experience points through recognized.
Mm.
So they form really the meat of the judges.
Okay.
The top 15% or so wind up as national, and the top 2 to 3% end up as master.
Okay.
It's a very difficult test to score very, very well on.
Yeah.
The It's, in my opinion, in my approach to grading exams, I want this test to be easy to pass, but difficult to make rank.
Okay. Well, that's fair.
I think if you get master, you should have a badge.
Absolutely.
You should carry a badge. You can walk into any brewery
and get a free beer.
It's like, excuse me, do you know who I am?
Well, we kind of do that.
Let me look at your brewing equipment, make sure it passes.
Yes.
The badge is not that big, but we do have pins that go on. There is a gold pin for being a master. There is a silver pin that we get for being national.
You get to wear a cape.
There are pins available for recognized and certified, although they're not automatically sent out.
Yeah.
Just be too expensive. It'd be prohibitive.
Yeah.
I think that
we do get a printout, a wall-size certificate that has your rank on it. You can hang it up along with the diploma you bought from Brazil.
Yes, beautiful.
And, you know,
I majored in accounting.
Yeah. You know, so it can go right up there, and you get a little wallet-sized card that can go in there. And I was in San Leandro one time at a sushi bar talking sake with a guy, and he goes, how do you know so much about this? I said, I'm a judge. He goes, no, you can't be a judge. You're not a judge. There's no judges for that. I'm a beer judge, and I just happen to like sake. He goes, no, there's no beer judges. There can't be beer judges. So I pull out my little card. It says national. It's got my name on it. He goes, and he holds it up, and he brings over three other people from the kitchen, and I think the busboy and the rest of it.
Yeah.
And he went over and he put it up on the wall underneath his most premium sakes.
Wow, that's wonderful.
I'm not sure if I was endorsing something or just being drafted.
Yeah, made a little of both.
Anytime Japan goes to war, they're calling you.
I think that any rank that gets you, that allows you to
Homeland
say, do you know who I am, is worth shooting for.
Yeah.
And for everybody.
I try it, but everyone knows.
I frequently ask, do you know who I am? But it's usually after about the eighth beer.
Yeah, it's very different.
Because I've forgotten.
Yeah, and how do I get home? A couple of questions from listeners. How long did you have to train and study for the BJCP exam? And what was the most challenging part of it?
There are
good questions.
Several answers to that. The first time I took the test was in 1992. I've been a home brewer since 1988. My hobby got to a point where I built a brewery in my garage that could do 35 gallons in a run.
Attaboy.
And at that point, it was time to get a license. And so for 6 years, I was brewer for Firehouse Brewing Company. Along the way, getting the judge training was important to me because I couldn't yet afford to go to Siebel, which was my dream. I did that later.
Okay.
The most daunting thing is understanding flavors, is developing a flavor memory of things. To this day, I'm still insensitive to certain things and overly sensitive to others, and I have to calibrate my palate to that.
Okay.
Beer styles is the second biggest thing, with statistics being right in there. I never collected baseball cards.
Hmm.
I never knew the stats of anybody.
Collected beer cans instead.
As a matter of fact, I did.
Lucky guess.
But I didn't drink till I was 21.
Right. At least not in public.
Yeah.
And the, memorizing stats of certain beers is really hard for me. Still is really hard for me.
Okay.
I've not yet scored my 90. I've not yet gotten up there. I've gotten close. And I blew it on a beer style question and rightfully was taken to task for it by the graders.
Okay.
So it's somewhat of a luck of the draw that you're going to get a bunch of beer styles that you're really, really familiar with.
Sure.
Especially now because the exam committee has expanded the number of beer styles that they will talk about and ask about. There's some controversy on that. There's some good rationale for doing that. It certainly does help make it easier to define who is really a master judge and who just tests well.
Yeah.
The hardest thing for me has always been developing a flavor memory. It's taken it took probably 10 good years of hard work and going to a sensory evaluation course after sensory evaluation course to get used to different flavors.
Okay.
And try to find them. I'm now pretty good at it. I think I'm pretty good at it. Memorizing styles and stats, still difficult.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. It's a different part of your brain, to be quite honest. It really is my brain shuts down with that. Like 2 + 2 is somewhere around 7 is all I've been able to figure out.
2 + 2 equals, and it's just right there.
Somewhere right around there.
So I guess it's fair to say you're unbeknownst to you, you're studying right when you start brewing, really, because you're trying to pick stuff out and you're kind of training your palate that way anyway. So by the time you want to go, I think in advance to you know, hey, I want to be a certified dude. You have a lot of the knowledge base right there. It's just honing it and refining it, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, last question, then we'll take a break, and we'll come back and we'll actually do some judging. This listener wants to know, as someone preparing to take the test, what's the most important part of preparing for the exam, and what do I need to know for sure what to do?
Sign your name, I think, is the big one.
Clear penmanship is probably one of the most important things. If it's hard enough to grade these exams, and if your penmanship sucks, we will try to read past that and into what's actually there. But memorized styles is probably at the very, very top of the list. Know your beer styles.
Okay.
After that, you probably want to know something about the origination of off flavors and something about the ingredients and how they're made, how they're processed, what kind of forms they come in. Know something about water. Then you want to know something about styles, because styles really kind of comes up pretty often.
Okay.
It would be important to know a little bit about where beer styles originate from, at least have a thumbnail sketch to it. But really kind of understanding styles is sort of the most important thing that you could possibly do.
Makes sense.
And you do want to know something about the process of brewing. There's a question on there that's a recipe question. It will name a style, come up with a recipe. The point of this question is not to create something that is going to beat Jameel in competition.
Mm-hmm.
The point of this question...
Because there are no 50-point beers, right?
Yeah, the point of this question is to show your understanding of ingredients, how they're used, and what the brewing process is, and what's going to happen along that brewing process. Because, again, we go back and we reverse engineer things and talk about the process. So it becomes, even though it's a single question, it becomes somewhat, it shows what a person knows about how beer is really done. And I don't know if I mentioned it, but, you know, knowing your styles is really important.
The certification program is really all about those styles, so let's make sure that you get to those. That's a great answer. A lot of things to work on there, so I hope that listener takes that into account and goes to town. I was one of these test takers who, you know, they give you like the outline in the university, and you bare minimums. I was bare minimum. I was a good test taker, though, like really good at taking tests. In fact, you mentioned this. There's a difference between knowing the material and being good at taking tests.
Right.
I was great at taking tests, so I could know shit and still get. So actually, I was going to say to you, Kevin, but I didn't want to discredit any of the BJCP stuff because it sounds pretty rigorous. An idiot like me graduated all through university, a couple of them some fairly tough courses, but I never should have.
No, you shouldn't. And I remember actually you were really good at talking to the teachers or professors after the test. I remember him coming home from the test, okay, well, in 2 weeks I got to go up to this professor and talk about my test. And he came back, he gave me an A-.
Oh, man, I used to go to baseball games with my professors. I'd bring a
little
beer.
Brown noser,
oh,
man.
Yeah. We were friends.
Terrible.
Well, the interesting thing is the schmooze factor is taken away from you in this. You know who your exam administrator is, but he's got to pass it on to the exam committee, who then sends it out to two different people to grade the test.
Yeah.
Oh.
And those two people, maybe in different parts of the country, have never met before.
Sure.
They take several weeks to go through the test, and then they kind of get together either by email or by phone or in some fashion and go through your test question by question. And really kind of analyze it. And it's a difficult process. From there, it goes to yet another person who then looks over what the comments are and what the score is and looks over the test and decides whether or not they agree with what's happening.
Wow.
And in cases, I've been on with a particularly tough grader who really kind of reads into some of the things that are being written, looking not only for the knowledge, but then goes into arrogance and whether or not this person's ready to be at a particular example.
Wow.
I don't agree with that. And not being the lead grader in that case, I didn't have much of a voice. But I've seen those kind of grades be overruled by the next step, where they've said, well, there's more here than meets the page, and there's more going on. An awful lot of care goes in it, and ultimately, the score really does reflect the preparation and intensity that you give this test.
Yeah. This might be, if I were to do this, it might be actually the only non-phony baloney degree or whatever I've ever received in my life. Yeah. Although, I think it would be an interesting experiment for me to go and take this test under a false name and see if I can bullshit my way through the BJCP test, as I've done several other tests.
Take it in your own name, because what happens is your name does not exist on that test to the graders.
You are not.
Are you saying that I can't go in and say, "Do you know who I am?"
Hey, Bob, that's just a cross in the brain tower.
Oh, you did real well.
Now, I'd want to go under a false name because I would want to pass this thing in a legitimate way. But I am curious to find out if I could bullshit my way through this one.
I'm saying no.
Well, I could certainly give you a 3-question mock test and see if you can.
We should have done. It's about a 3-hour show anyway. We should have had me just sit in the other room taking the test, and you guys do the show, and then at the end see if I pass.
Or even better, me.
That would have been better.
That would have been great.
My strategy always at university was just write as much as you can. Like one question, I just wrote 25 pages. What? Professor would never read that.
And that's a good rule of thumb for this particular test. Believe it or not.
Oh, really?
Quantity is important because it does start to show what you really know. You're just blowing your way through it.
And even if you're just circling the topic, you still have knowledge, and you proved that with that. Because I didn't just write down random stuff. You still are on the topic. You just might not know the specific answer that could be expressed in one sentence. You've got to do it on 25 pages.
Right.
Describe the flavor of Kolsch. The flavor of Kolsch is follows. The flavor of Kolsch tastes like
I would start where Kolsch originates. I would start describing what flavor even is, I would get all philosophical on that one. And then
is flavor?
That's the key. It really is the key. Communication is the bottom line in essay tests, because the better, in Daniela's case, it would be the better her German. The better your English is and the more eloquent you can be with different transitions and juxtapositions that I can't even use
eloquent
anymore.
Eloquent English.
The more likely you are to sound like you know what you're talking about. And if, for example, they want you to have 10 specific items, you can totally get away with 3. Trust me. You can make it sound like you... And I'm not talking about the BJCP test.
Just test in general.
Test in general. If they want you to know 10 specific things, if you're really good at brushing up against the other 7 with the 3 that you really know, you're fine.
You're talking about
a B+, A- every time.
And plus, you get points for putting your name on. That's what I'm saying. You got to stress that. It's just like the SATs.
Did you just say that I cannot be eloquent in English?
No. I said the goal is to be eloquent in English. And what I meant to say, when you were at university, you could have been eloquent in English and failed because your teachers weren't reading English. That was my point. Don't get all defensive about your English. Your English is fine.
There's a black humor that you have in here.
You speak your English vigorously every episode of this show.
With your black humor is awesome.
When we come back, we're going to continue talking to Kevin, but we're going to do some judging, some actual behind the iron curtain judging with Kevin Pratt, BJCP nationally certified judge. The beer's working, JP.
Good.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
This one always makes me laugh. listening to Three Guys.
Excuse me, what about me?
Sorry.
You're listening to Three Guys and One Girl. Use a radio show as an excuse to drink more beer. The Brewcasters.
On the Brewing Network.
You're tuned in to the Brewcast with Kevin Pratt helping us out. He's a BJCP National Certified Judge, and we are going to do some homebrew judging. Nice. We've got several listener beers in front of us. We thought it'd be a great time to get these tasted on the air. And then also at the same time, and we'll taste them as well. If there's enough left over, then JP and I will get into them and let you know what we think just on the side, because you guys send them just for the Brewcast opinion as well. But we thought it'd be cool to get them judged, you know, just for the heck of it.
That'd be very cool.
A good idea of what might have happened if you did send these into competition. And I think that some of these people may be actually sending their beers into competition. And then I think to wrap it up, I'm going to have Kevin do my beer, judge my beer, which I actually will be sending into competition, assuming it lasts.
Oh, so this 100's for me.
Yes, that's right. Take the $100 bill and buy yourself something nice there, Kevin. All right.
$100 bill and your pit bull sitting next to me.
That's right. We don't mess around around here.
Right. You will take that money.
By the way, I do have lots of questions still sit in front of me, so listeners, don't worry about that. I'm going to get your questions answered. I've got them all right here, and just waiting for Kevin's response, and we'll probably wrap up the show with all these questions. We'll do the old rapid-fire thing that we do to make sure everybody gets things answered.
5-second rapid-fire.
Now, here's the way we're going to do this. We'll do a couple of them in different ways. What I'm going to do, Kevin, is tell you what style of beer this particular bottle has been entered in. Okay, at least, and I'm just going to do that based on what the listener marked it down as when they sent it to me. It's what they said the beer is.
Okay.
And then I'd like you to judge it just as if it were within that style. And then certainly go ahead and tell us if it fit within or, and what you might have entered it in instead. Okay. I think a pretty basic and let me get through this first. In specific, you are actually more qualified or better judging. Is it Meads and Ciders that's kind of your specialty?
There is a qualification committee going on right now for Mead and Cider judging, and we are going to create specific ranks for Mead and Cider judges. That's still in formation. I'm a member of that committee, but I am in that. It hasn't been decided yet.
Okay.
So far, there is no specialty judge for any style.
Okay. Okay. We'll start with the cider. I got a cider here from our listener.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm going to give...
Just say the names, because we have a lot of listeners here in the chat room who are actually listening and can't wait for their beards to be judged.
Okay.
So the name you can say of the person who submitted it.
If I have it on the paperwork, I will give the name. I think I do for most of them. This one is from Sean, a part of Brew Free or Die. He was
out there in New Hampshire, right?
Yeah, his club was spotlighted on our lunch meet show there, JP. Yeah. So this one's from Sean. He wants us to enjoy it, but why don't we, as we will. But let's go ahead and have it judged. Sean, if you were to enter this cider into competition, then this is what you would have.
Okay. There's a couple of things that go on in terms of procedure. First off, all the judges are ready. Everything, they've sort of filled out their score sheets. Everything is set. We are all able to look at and evaluate the pour, and the pour happens at the same time for all of the judges. So two or three glasses are lined up for these judges. It is important when we judge that all of the beers are poured the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Because that helps them all to be evaluated exactly the same.
Okay.
One brewer may find that their beer pours better down the side of the glass very slowly, but that isn't the way it's necessarily going to get poured in competition.
Okay.
The preferred method...
Do you do a bottle inspection first?
We do a bottle inspection. And we'll talk about bottle inspections later as we get along. Let's talk about procedure, though.
Okay.
The important thing here is that as we judge, we are listening to the hiss that comes out of it. We are looking at what the action of the beer is as it's coming out of the bottle. It's poured directly down the center, and we only pour about 2 or 3 ounces.
For every
style. Another flaw that a number of brewers will make is when they read the evaluation sheet, they may have an entire beer poured, and they're drinking the full 12 ounces as they're reading the score sheet. That's evaluating this with only 3 ounces or so, which is going to...
kind of stymie the head a little bit. We understand that.
Okay.
It's going to give us a much more limited number of esters for a shorter period of time. So this beer is really going to kind of transfer through all of its phases of being cold to warm and all of the aromas that come with it in a pretty short period of time.
Okay.
That's good for us judging because some styles are much better warm than they are cold. And as we all know, the colder a beer has to be drinkable, the worse it generally is.
Okay. That's a good evaluation.
Yeah, Coors Light. There you go.
That's your beer.
I think, oh, damn it.
Okay, so this is a cider, and we're just going to call it a common... Cider is still one of those styles that's in evolution.
Okay.
Right now we have a few different styles. Does he say whether or not this is a New England style or a French style or a common cider?
He doesn't say.
Okay.
Now, should we be trying some of this too?
Sure.
Side by side?
Yeah, why not?
Pour it the same way, JP.
I will.
Did you watch?
I did. I mean, I was looking at my reflection in the mirror, but I think I can figure it out.
I mean, I do have some details about this, but he doesn't say whether it was
okay.
You know, French.
So that would be an important idea because those are going to be distinctly different aromas I'm going to be looking for. What's appropriate in one style is not necessarily appropriate in another. It's not a good idea for a judge to try to categorize a beer as they are judging it because then you don't know what the target is.
Okay.
And that's one of the things when you were talking earlier about, hey, I just like to brew my beer. I don't think there should be styles. Well, then how do you know you hit your target?
Okay.
Are you going to name the? Are you basically saying what it is after it's already born, or are you actually trying to hit something?
Yeah.
And perhaps you missed, and you'd like to know how to hit what you wanted.
Yeah. Now. You go ahead and do your thing. What I was curious about is, as I was doing the aroma, and I won't say which noises I was going to make, but I instantly wanted to give oohs or ahs or boos or noes and be sort of verbal about the beer. Is that a no-no in the judge's room?
For purposes of what we're doing here, I think it's appropriate for us to do it. But as we judge in silence. We write in silence. There may be a question by a novice judge about one thing or another, but generally they're very short.
Okay.
The more experienced the judge is, the less likely they are to let those sorts of commentary or questions affect what they're writing about the beer.
Makes sense, yeah. Okay.
Because you don't want to affect the other people, right?
So, but you say I'm allowed to do it here, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Like how Kevin is now in charge of the whole studio. I think this beer smells great. This cider rather smells awesome.
Okay.
So that's the first thing I want to do is go, ooh. And I can smell the alcohol.
Yeah.
There's definitely there's an alcohol note to this. There is an apple note to it, but there's a distinctly paraffin wax to it and a little bit of a plasticky vinyl kind of thing going on.
I get that plasticky vinyl, even though I think it smells great.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying
and
there.
And sort of a waxy thing.
It definitely helps to hear it because it helps you to put that in your dictionary of terms.
To say what that is.
It's interesting. People, you know, you can say it and then instantly you kind of, that's the
cider
smell.
Does not have to smell anything like apples.
Okay.
It's really important to understand that this is closer to a wine. Wines do not smell anything like grapes.
No, they don't.
Okay? They smell like wines.
Right.
They smell like they've been fermented. And it's important to understand that this is a fermented fruit, and it's going to smell different than the fresh fruit, or should. In common cider, a little more apple-like note is important. In French cider, it's far, far more wine and champagne-like. There's a much, much different approach to it. So it's really a crapshoot for people to enter ciders and meads these days because judges are not that familiar with it. And we're hoping to change that in the BJCP. It is a shortcoming that's being addressed.
Fair enough. I like that. I'm always open with my shortcomings, JP.
You are, I know. Every Friday. I see them hanging.
I'm even writing notes on my beer score sheet here. How about that?
Really. Not, you are, no, man. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to say.
And as this thing warms up, the aroma profile pretty much stays the same. I have not yet drank this yet. One of the things that happens as I pour it is I start my visual inspection right away, and I start writing in the appearance column. I'm looking for head, foam. I'm looking for appearance. This one is petalant, and petalant meaning that it's not really forming carbonation. It's just kind of forming bubbles. Every now and then they may drift to the top.
Hmm.
But it's just kind of, you know, pensive. It's shy about that. This has what's called an open nose, meaning that it is you are not searching for what's there. What's there is not particularly pleasant, but it is very, very apparent.
Okay.
So it's not a closed nose where you're really kind of searching. You kind of sniff and you're thinking, well, there's nothing really there.
Yeah.
That'd be a closed nose.
It's there.
Okay. Color of this is a light straw. It is brilliant in clarity. It does pour very nicely. It doesn't foam. It doesn't gush. It doesn't have any off appearances at all. So mm-hmm. that's going to pretty much get the 3 points for that appearance section. It used to be that appearance counted for a couple more points. They now account for 3. And I think that's a good thing because some of the very best-looking examples of any beer I've ever seen, clarity, foam stand, carbonation, and color, come from the most infected sources.
Okay.
So it's, you know, appearance is a good thing, but it's not everything. It's going to certainly invite you to want to drink the product.
He's going to have it. You know, I'm giving another reason right now of why I know I can't be a BJCP judge. I can't wait to drink it. Like, I just want to I'm like, all right, yeah, it looks good. It looks, smells good.
Let's pound this thing.
Yeah. But I'm with
you. So here's how this works. The aroma is probably 90% of what you're going to get out of this. Flavor is just sweet, salty, sour, and bitter. And then there is mouthfeel involved in there as well. So it's really, even though it's a major point, in the evaluation, and it's worth an awful big part of the score,
mm-hmm.
you can learn a lot more from the aroma.
Okay. All right. Kevin had a drink. I'm allowed to have one now.
Yeah, you are. I've had a couple. It's a...
This is very perfumey. There's still a slight little vinyl note in there, but it's actually something I think that will change with age. This is distinctly buttery and Chardonnay-like in the Chardonnay fashion. This is really very nice and light and refreshing, highly alcoholic, very winey, lots and lots and lots of fruit in there, a little bit of barnyard, and barnyard in this case being a positive attribute.
Mm-hmm.
Barnyard meaning kind of a little bit of cut dried hay, maybe a little bit of earthiness going on in there. It's quite positive attribute. Aside from the vinyl notes that are going on in there, this is really very nice. This tastes nothing like apples or apple juice. This tastes more like a really nice, fine Chardonnay or perhaps a Sauvignon Blanc, although it's really big for that. And I'm reaching for these wine things because... you know, I'm not that familiar with a lot of wines. I used to have a big wine collection, and then I learned something about beer, and I've gotten much better. So it's, you know, I enjoy my beers. Beers are more complex than wines. There are more flavor variation in the beer world and more flavor descriptors in the beer world than there are in the wine world.
That a boy. That was your invited back statement right there, Teddy.
Kind of lost you with the wine, but you're coming
back. I think that it does taste a bit apple-y and apple juicy, actually.
There is some apple in there. There's certainly some tone of the fruit. But far more of this is built up into the body and the mouthfeel.
Okay.
And the alcohol content, or the alcohol profile of this.
Yeah,
in fact,
it's hot.
This particular thing has legs. I forgot to mention that in the appearance section.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I do with bigger beers and such is I look at how it fades down the side of the glass. And this one forms legs.
Yeah.
It forms very well-defined legs.
Which is a wine trait, isn't it?
It generally means that the alcohol percentage is above 12.
Okay. If it sticks to the glass, it's above 12.
Well, yeah, except the viscosity plays into that, too, and it's harder to tell with beer.
Okay.
Because there's so much more viscosity going on.
Okay.
This is otherwise well attenuated. It's clean. There's no sourness to this. There's nothing really off to it. Mm-hmm. It's got a very good acidic balance to it. It's got plenty of, and the thing I'm enjoying the most out of this is the body that goes on.
Okay.
This is something I would enjoy very much with food.
Yeah.
I could enjoy this a lot. Criticism or not, you know, this would probably score in probably about the mid-low 30s, probably about a 34 or 35.
Okay. That's a great score, isn't it? Let me look at my little score sheet.
What did you score, Justin?
I have no idea. I'm just trying to figure out what
to... You want to pass it to Daniela, do the math?
30 to, what did you say, 32 to what, 35?
Yeah, you said 33, 35, I think.
That is a very good score, it says. Beers in this range may have a minor flaw, technical or stylistic, or may be lacking in balance or complexity. And that is a range of 30 to 37. There's only two categories above very good, one being excellent right above it, and outstanding above that. And by the way, there are three below it. So you're mm-hmm. you're above the middle there, because it could have been good, which is 21 to 29 points. Fair is 14 to 20, and problematic is 0 to 13.
You know, I would be interested to find out what yeast Sean used with this, just for my own edification. It definitely tastes very Chardonnay, like QH.
Chances are, in meat and cider, they're not using a beer yeast.
No, but I mean, like, I guess more to the point, I want to see if he used a wine, like a... Like
can
a
I
QA20 like a white, like a Chardonnay yeast, because it tastes very, very much like a Chardonnay.
Can I answer it yet, Kevin, or do you need
sure,
to wait till
ahead.
We're done? Okay, actually, it was not for. There was no yeast added. It was fermented with natural yeast from apples.
So this really? Is a wild fermentation.
It's a wild fermentation.
Wow.
There's a couple other interesting things about it too. If I can go on,
sure.
Are we done doing the main evaluation?
You bet.
It was brewed in October of 2004, so it's already aged a little bit.
Wow.
He does say it's more of an apple wine. It does come in, and you were right about this, Kevin, at 12.5% alcohol. The other part of it is that he did add sugar to it, approximately 30 pounds. It was all fermented in a 55-gallon bourbon barrel. So definitely some flavors coming out of that, and I'm wondering how much of that aroma type things that we tasted, that we were smelling right in the beginning, came from that part of it.
Now, when you, I'm sorry to interrupt. Now, when you would judge this, Kevin, would you know that it was fermented in a barrel, and then would they have like a note section?
If I'd have thought that, I would have said it this time. No,
yeah.
And that's making an assumption that I'm not there when the brewer makes this. I'm not there when they do things. And it constantly surprises me when I think something is in something and it's not.
Mm-hmm. But in some of the beers, you know, they'll have a note or a special note. Would they do something with that? Would be something that they would list? So maybe the judge would taste it and not think something's there that it's not?
Yeah, they would. If they're best to list it. If it is a contributor to the flavor, it is best to list it.
So if this guy were to enter this, he would list that as a...
As a bourbon barrel aged cider.
Okay.
And this, you know, and again, this is kind of a crapshoot that they may or may not be understood in what they were trying to do. Mentioning this, I can find a little bit of wood note inside that vinyl, but that vinyl is still vinyl to me.
Mm.
And I find it in the aroma. I don't find that much wood character in the taste, nor would I expect it to be that way.
Okay.
And in the treatment that they're doing, this kind of puts it more in the French category in terms of treatment.
If I were to score this, and who really gives a shit, because I'm not a BJCP guy,
yeah.
But I would...
I care.
I'd go 37, which is the very top of very good. I wouldn't go into excellent. I would go into... I'd go very good, but I'd give it a 37, right?
That's
up
fine.
There
this
at
is
the
very,
top.
This is very good.
Because it's very good.
Yeah.
That's
right. You are awesome.
And you know what I'm thinking? And I'm going to be honest about the way my psyche works right now. Before you had mentioned the plastic parts of the aroma, which I hadn't picked out as that specifically in the aroma, I did pick it up that it was very open, like you said. It was just definitely a rush over my sinus and palate. So, and I liked that kind of strength. Before you had said that, I would have gone into the excellent range. My vote was definitely swayed a little bit, because I could go back after you said it and go, okay, yeah you're kind of right. It is there's a little plastic thing in there.
I think it's hard to be, you know, to give. It's easy to give a lot of points. Like I did judge one round with Kevin for the more beer competition, and both Chicken Boy and I did actually. And you know, Chicken Boy would say tucker 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 tucker, and I said, you know, yeah, I really agree with that. Mm. And then Kevin would come in and say, these are the stuff I'm tasting, and we're all tasting the same stuff, but I gave it this amount of points, and John and I would have given it, you know, 8 or 9 points higher, because we don't know the values that certain flavors, I think, lend to the beer. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's easier to grade higher.
That's a good thing. I don't, you know, you should be positive about the beers that you taste. You should be positive about the beverages you're taking. Somebody took the time to make these. Somebody took the time to decide, this is what I was going to craft.
Yeah.
And then they put it in a bottle, and they sent it somewhere to be evaluated, and they paid money to do it. There's a real person on the other end of that score sheet.
Yeah.
So, again, that's one of the reasons why a long time before the score sheets actually asked for
email address. I had them on there because it reminded me that there was always another person on there.
Yeah.
And it reminded me that if they don't like my comments, they can contact
That's
me.
That's right. Now, I like that philosophy, Kevin. Be honest with me. Are there some judges, have you run across some people that are just real douchebags in there and they're like, I know it. I know it all. I'm tasting this. Not taking into account the human being on the other end. They're just looking at it grammatically and really technically. Does that have you run across that?
Sure, and okay. It's part of the whole cynicism with what judging can be about.
Yeah. I thought you haven't judged with Jamil yet.
Yeah. Okay.
Just kidding, Jamil.
Well, the bottom line to that is again, people go through phases in their learning. Everybody comes in with a palate. Tongues are not interchangeable.
Hmm.
Everybody's got an opinion. Everybody's got a palate. And that palate is going to be influenced by, you know, is the judge a smoker or not? Did they have a spicy meal or not? Are they in a good mood or not? I judged at a competition near San Francisco where we were in a warehouse, and it was in February, and it was bloody damn cold.
Hmm.
It was so cold that one of my co-judges, a professional brewer, could not see hardly anything positive in any of the beers that we were tasting.
Yeah.
And was comparing virtually every beer to his own. He was going for an archetype sample.
Yeah.
He was not going for the range.
Okay.
I didn't think he was treating the beers that fairly, but it affected a lot of things. It affected how much I wanted to write. My hands hurt.
Yeah.
It affected how I perceived things. Things were very cold. It's hard for me to think about the beer when I'm thinking, you know, I really should have worn a thicker jacket.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
You know, I came from Sacramento to San Francisco, and it's cold here. So, you know, it's hard to give that kind of, have a lot of that stuff pop out of your head. I do my best, but I'm not 100% successful, and I don't think any judge is.
Yeah.
There's another judge at that same table who has chronic arthritic conditions in his fingers, and you could barely read what he writes, and he writes as well as he can, but he's on a panel with a very well-respected magazine. He's got a great palate, and he can articulate it, and if you got our comments back verbally, he would be wonderful.
Right.
So in a number of ways, in a situation like that, as the BJCP judge, as somebody with a particular kind of a vocabulary, it is incumbent on me to, number one, to try to bring more out of these guys.
Yeah.
And to kind of get them to think about what they're actually saying and what's actually going on. But more so to make sure that I write the very best score sheets I can, as complete as possible.
Hmm.
Because no matter how good or bad the beer is, the brewer deserves that.
Sure. All right, let's try a mead. We got that lined up. And while we're getting that ready, I do want to ask, in sport, in baseball, if you're on a winning streak, they say that you're not supposed to get any action, like before the game, like you're supposed to stay on the high road, you know what I mean? Because you'll ruin your energy.
Yeah, there you go.
Is that true in judging? Are you not supposed to get any action before you judge a competition? Because it might, your palate goes to shit?
I think you should pass that one on to Jamil.
I'd be happy to ask Jamil. Is he in the chat room with you, Daniela?
No, he's not.
Yeah, he left. I would guess that Jamil does not. I bet he's on the straight and narrow for weeks before a competition.
Honey, you can't climb it. I have a beer to judge.
I have beers to judge.
Now I opened this beer, and it didn't fizz or pop. It just kind of fell off pretty much.
Okay.
And there's some, you want to check that out? There's some residual stuff. I don't know if it's from the cap or what, but.
Yeah, there's some debris.
Some debris. What are we talking? Rust, plastic, sort of strange things here? Or?
I don't know. It could just be crystallized honey.
Okay.
But there's some debris there.
A little debris when we took the cap off.
I wanted to point that out.
I've had that happen. The first time I discovered that was drinking even craft beer out of a bottle.
You had a little debris around your opening?
Well, you get that rusty flavor in your mouth.
Yeah.
And so I started wiping every bottle I ever open on my shirt. And this, and occasionally, you can look at your shirt and actually see the ring that you just wiped off of that bottle.
How many beers you had?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good counter.
That's the way you
and we're
count.
Pouring these a little bit informally. That is that when we pour these beers, the bottle does not get tipped back up. It stays at a 90-degree angle as we pour.
Oh, that's bad.
In this case, we're, you know, tilting it back straight, back straight. What happens is you churn the sediment that may be in the bottom, and then the, you know, the third pour looks different than the first pour.
Makes sense.
I'm the jackball here.
Okay.
I apologize.
You should let Kevin pour all the beers from now on.
I should.
Well, I'm pouring my own, so.
Oh, you are. That's all that counts then. Ours don't matter anyway.
Exactly. We're doing it how we would have done it anyway.
It looks like it's got stuff. That's our only evaluation.
Drink it through your teeth.
All right,
it'll filter it out.
Everyone's looking at it, making sure the lighting in here isn't the best lighting on the planet. So
now, normally, a mead maker would name the honey.
Okay.
And this looks like a buckwheat or a wildflower kind of honey, but I can't tell.
Oh,
and they would tell me if this is also
it says it right there on the bottle.
Has any other kind of adjunct in it.
Okay. So can I tell you?
Yeah.
Okay. This one is wildflower honey.
Okay.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. There's 12 pounds of pecan honey. And 3 pounds of wildflower honey. So two different types of honey in there.
Okay. And this kind of judging requires a familiarity with the raw honey types and with how they might age out. What's interesting about this one is it's got a deep amber color. It's got pretty good clarity in that there's a slight haze to it, which may or may not be sediment.
Hmm.
It is not forming legs.
This one, by the way, is from Lars Wright, if he's listening, you know that we're tasting your mead. Lars Wright. Thank you for this.
So it's not forming any legs. It is still. I would consider this one dead still because it's not even trying to form bubbles.
Now, all right, let me clarify with the forming legs because mine is sticking to the side of the glass. And in fact, I can completely see the entire arc stuck to the side of my glass when it goes down.
A little bit. It comes and goes for me, like a lot of things.
I mean, that's what we're talking about when you say forming legs, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, it forms an arc, but what happens is there should be distinct drips as it comes down the side of the glass, not just around the outside of it, but comes down.
I'm getting a little drips,
now I'm starting to see. Now I'm starting to see some legs.
Okay.
But I'm seeing basically one big, essentially, third leg.
Okay. That's
we know all about the... excuse me. Let me step back a little bit.
Thank you.
It's definitely not like the cider was, where it was really easy to see.
Right. So it's not that distinctive. It's not... I would say this is trying to form legs, but it's not really doing a good job of it, which is just merely a data point for me. It's not a plus or minus.
Okay. It's just telling you the alcohol content.
Right.
Okay.
Now, with meads, what is important for a judge is we're doing something that the mead community would very much like us to do more often, which is actually judge out of glass rather than we typically use small plastic glasses.
Oh, okay.
And we judge 10-ounce plastic glasses. And, again, that would be something I would tell a brewer to actually evaluate their beer in because that's how it's going to come to us.
Yeah.
And we're going to pour it at the table. And
good
we're
idea.
Going to check it out that way. But the mead community would love us to use more glass. There's some logistical issues with that. It'll probably never actually happen. It's a good idea, but we're doing it that way. Always you have to use a clean new glass each time. And now as this is warming up in my hands, it is starting to form more legs.
Okay.
So definitely that kind of tells me something about the body that this has. This has extremely big body, even before I taste it. Deep amber color. Really nice, very pretty red amber color.
It is. It looks great.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Am I allowed to? Are we tasting it?
I think so.
The aroma.
I'm already ahead of you. So.
The aroma is there's definitely some nutshell, like an almond or a walnutty nutshell aroma to it.
Yeah.
There is definitely strong honey in there. That's to be expected. I'm missing some notes that I like in a mead, which is a little of that comb-like waxiness. That is something I would kind of expect in a lot of meads. That really kind of shows a lot of character. The honey is to have a little waxy combness to it.
Okay.
Yeah, it smells like.
But there is
like
cherry. There's a lot of deep cherry, dark cherry here, black cherry note to it, sort of a dried cherry note to it. There's also a dried cranberry note to it, which is really nice and sweet. Blackberry in there, a little fresh blackberry going on.
Smells nice. Danielle's making funny faces.
What else is new?
There's some nice sweetness to the aroma, too, that's very pleasant.
Is this color really typical for this style?
For the mead?
Meads should follow the color of the honey. That's why the mead maker should make sure to state the color of the honey.
Mm-hmm.
If no no honey honey is stated, we don't know what exactly may go on. There's a lot of things that can cause a tawny color like this, too, including oxidation, age. I've had some great examples of 9-year-old and 10-year-old lambics, straight lambics, that are dead still like this and pick up this tawny color from age, just from a little oxidation and sharingness to it. So if this was, say, a 10-year-old mead, and it started off golden, it conceivably could pick up a tawny color from oxidation. And I would expect maturity and a lot of different flavors from something like that. I can't tell that as a judge.
Right.
I don't know how old this is. It would be presumptuous of me to try to define how old it is.
And are they allowed to put it on the bottle for you and whatnot?
Both meads and ciders still have an awful lot of descriptive ability to them. They need to specify certain things, such as whether or not this is a sweet mead, a sac mead, which is kind of a standardized term for, it's in the right alcohol range. Is it a dry mead? Is it a sweet mead? Is it petulant? Is it sparkling? Is it still?
Okay.
I will simply describe this as I see it. What the brewer meant to do may be something entirely different.
Okay. I'm not gonna judge this one at all because I don't know doo-doo about meads.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Well, what do you taste?
Honey and alcohol. I really know nothing about meads.
Is it good? Does it taste good?
I've had some. I've maybe tried 4 meads in my life.
Yeah.
2 of them were absolutely horrible.
Really?
Although I was told they're great examples of meads, and I thought they were absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
This one's nice because it's very sweet. It has a lot of that honey character to me. But whether or not that's what it's supposed to have, I have no idea.
On my palate, the only thing that really bothers me about this mead, and I don't know if that's the style, is I taste the alcohol so much. Like, it's almost like a hard liquor, and I don't usually go for that.
Yeah, this is very hot, very alcoholic. That could be a plus or minus in this. It would tend to typically be a fault because it takes it out of balance.
Okay.
It has a far thinner body to it than I would expect. There is a little bit of a citric kind of acidic note to it, kind of like a vitamin C tablet citric note that happens right on the center, going right straight down the middle of my tongue. That's different than a lactic note, which is going to be smoother, still sharp but smoother and kind of affect the sides of my tongue, or an acetic acid note, which is going to be a little more prickly, a little more like spikes on my tongue.
Okay. Do they tell you that when you're taking these courses to get through the BJCP? They tell you exactly what the certain parts of off flavors will do on your tongue?
Nope.
You have to figure that out.
A lot of times that comes with an awful lot of advanced self-training.
Okay.
You will get, here's acidic, here is wordy, here is diacetyl.
But you have to figure out what
and
that does to you.
Usually hit that. You over the head levels of it so that you understand what a single flavor or single aroma is like. But it takes a lot of tasting to kind of get this stuff together. And it takes a lot of talking to people that make this.
Because I'm looking at the beer score sheet, and we're going to need to, I don't mean to not give it a good evaluation, but we definitely need to move on because we've got a lot of beer I want to taste too. The beer score sheet right here on the sheets that the judges have will actually list definitions of off flavors. And there's a whole bunch of them. And
they come in handy.
Yeah. And I guess you learn, that's great to know, Kevin, that they tell you, okay, this one is acidic, this one is astringent. And then you then have to remember what it is that particular trait does to you.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that you can reproduce it then on the score sheet.
And there are specific score sheets for meads and specific score sheets for cider that I did not bring.
Okay. So score on this mead. What, are we ready to do that, you think, so we can get to some beer, too? What would you score this guy? Should I tell you some more about it that's on here first?
No, before you do it, I'm going to tell you what my expectations are. I do expect, I think it's got a decent sweetness. I think it's very dry. It's dead still. It's got some decent notes to it, but it lacks complexity that I would look for.
Mm-hmm.
It has... the cherry note goes right into the flavor with a little almond and a little bit of nutshell kind of flavors to it, which has got to be the pecan honey that's in there.
Yeah.
But it's not really showing a lot of real good honey character outside of the sweetness. It's not showing me any depth to it. It's all top note.
Okay.
I would like it to have more depth to it. And I think a lot of that may be due to, and here's the reverse architecture part, that may be due to the amount of acid blend used or the types of acids used for this.
Okay. That's fair. All right. So, score?
This one is pretty much, it's a mead, although I do get some positive attributes out of it. It doesn't have any negative flaws. This one rates right around 28.
28, which is in good. Fair and problematic are still below that. Good at 28. 29 would be the top of good. Descriptor is a satisfactory beer that generally fits the style parameters. Scores near the upper end of this range may have only a few minor flaws or be slightly out of style and also may be lacking in balance or complexity, just like Kevin was saying. Scores near the lower end of this range tend to have more flaws and are likely to have stylistic inconsistencies as well. Well, this one was from Lars Wright. It's his, he says, his pecan mead, which is 12 pounds of pecan honey, 3 pounds of wildflower honey. He used the D71 yeast, and it's been aged for approximately 8 months. And that's all the information I have, although he does want us to serve it cool and not cold, which we did do, right, Kevin?
We did. It was appropriately tempered.
And he did want us, the other notes on the bottle are, please share with Chicken Boy. he also says, go Kings, Sharks suck. A little late for both of those teams.
Yeah. Well, Lars can blow me.
We've had it for a little while. So I'm sorry. You know what, John, I owe you some cider, I guess. We didn't get to share it with you. You're not here today. But just know in good faith that Lars did want us to share it with you.
And it's not biscuity.
Just recap that thing, toss in the back of your car, take it to him on Tuesday, Wednesday.
Absolutely. It'll work.
I'm sorry, Lars. your mead deserves better.
Okay. I'm going to move on to what I think, and I hope that this isn't a case of what you were talking to us about, where bottles are occasionally mishandled, but I'm pretty sure that... Okay. This is... Spiders. His name is Rob, but his screen name is Spider.
Oh, yeah.
It's his wit beer, which he calls his garden hoe. And that's his wit beer. And definitely, in looking at the bottle, Kevin was just holding it up for us. It does have a lot of sediment in the bottom. So I think we'll do the old keep it in pouring. Not that it's going to matter to the rest of us as long as Kevin gets a good pour.
Right.
Keep it in pouring position like you mentioned earlier. I like that you guys do that. It's a great point that if you keep tilting it back and forth, all of that sediment's just going to go crazy in there.
Now, would you want all that in the for the wit beer? I mean, do you want that sediment to kind of give it the cloudy and the flavor, or
wit
is that
beer
another
is typically
style
cloudy due to proteins in the beer, not because of yeast.
Okay.
Now, we may have had this in our fridge for, I don't know when we got this, Daniela, but it has been in the fridge, and will that impart some clarity to it? Just
yes.
It's basically been lagering for
been
quite...
Proteins
quite
have weight. After a period of time, they can settle out.
Okay.
Some styles, not entirely, but in the higher molecular weight ones, the heavy ones, can actually settle out.
Okay. I think we've had this one for a little while, so clarity issues, Daniela and I will take responsibility for.
You'll take the hits on your point.
We've German lagered them, as Daniela likes to do.
Everything since, here must be German.
JP, excuse me.
Yeah, but it's French bread. I don't
just
care.
Really weird deja vu with you, dude.
Why?
Oh, my gosh.
And I do have lots of information about this beer as well, so after we get through evaluating it, we can definitely kind of dig in. And
okay, so nice things about this beer already in pouring this thing is that it has a really nice creamy white head, meringue-like, really nice and dense. It's about 3 fingers wide, which is really pretty, pretty much like a lot of Belgian styles. They pour with absolutely heroic heads. The clarity, there's more clarity to this than I actually expect from style. I've seen these up to milky in terms of color. This is just lightly hazy, would be considered good clarity, maybe a little too clear for style.
I just love that there's heroic head involved.
Yeah, that was good. That sounds like a porn.
You should write the descriptors yourself, Kevin. I don't know if you just read all this stuff or what, but I would buy your book. That's what I'm saying.
How to describe beer. as told to Justin Crosley.
See, now, this one I think... I just hate saying this because I just feel like a dope afterward when Kevin tells me what's going on. Mm. I think it smells great. I love the aroma in this beer.
Just shut it.
I'm feeling like such a dope.
You are such a puppet.
To me it smells like Oz and Doc both introduced me to the Ho Garden. I avoid the wits and wheats in general.
Right.
But they introduced me to the Ho Garden, and I love it. It's a great beer. I can't drink a lot of it. And this is not identical, but definitely reminiscent of that aroma.
The aroma I get is right off the bat is just a huge sulfur.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of sulfur?
I don't know. The kind that Kevin's going to tell me about right now. Because I don't know. From the yeast, I would imagine.
Well, sure. But is it eggy?
It's not eggy.
Farty?
It's kind of farty.
Farty?
Yeah.
That's not a term, JP.
I'm holding one back.
Kevin,
I can show you the
term. It's not one we actually write, per se, but it is...
it's a term. If Kevin said it, if it's heroic head,
right,
it's
Justin,
also farty.
Get out of the studio now. That's enough.
I have an aromatic, heroic, farty head.
I smell it, too, though. It smells like a volcano.
Yeah?
A volcano?
All right, let's see.
I just like to say
what I'm getting out of it is there is a little egginess going on in there. It's sort of an egg salad thing
going
on.
Exactly. That's egg what salad. I meant to say.
Not volcano egg salad is what you meant.
But there is, but that's really rather subtle, and it's not bad.
It's going away.
And that's an important thing to understand, is that one of the things that happens with a lot of beers is the beer is poured immediately, and then they just shove it right up their nose to try to get every little nuance out of it. There's some good reasons to do that, but you don't have to. There's an awful lot of beer styles, such as this one, that are going to be poured and are going to be allowed to just kind of foam out, and the head is going to go all the way to the top of the glass. And in this case, we have a good 4.5-5 inches between the pour and the top of the glass.
Yeah.
And so that's going to absolutely hold in a ton of these aromas that are otherwise going to be very volatile and be gone in a lot of beer styles. So with things like Pilsner, with things like this style and such that would be served appropriately right up to the very top, you're going to miss a lot of that. And so you've got to give it a little bit of room there, some wiggle room in that.
See?
Way.
Daniela, that's all I was doing was giving a little room.
And you got a trap on the guy.
The style specifically says a low, spicy, herbal hop aroma is optional, but should never overpower the other characteristics. There should be no diacetyl, vegetal, celery-like, or ham-like aromas.
I hope not.
From certain types of spices, those are inappropriate. The spices should blend in with the fruity, floral, and sweet aromas, and should not be overly strong.
Yeah, and the aroma, the biggest aroma I'm getting out of this is rose and geranium, which is perfectly nice, perfectly appropriate. There's a background of citrus to it. There's a third layer background to it that's a little more kind of like an old cumin or coriander is an easy one to reach for because it's expected in the style. But there's a little more dry spice to it in the background. Real soft, real pleasant.
It even says that within the style there could be a moderate amount of sort of spicy pepperiness, but I don't get that from this.
I can find the
pepperiness
pepper
is not
going
to be a flavor per se. It's going to be a perception. It's going to be that kind of a mouthfeel of pepperiness.
Okay. It's even in the aroma description here, and I definitely don't get any peppery out of the aroma.
I get
this
it.
This is a pretty decent mouthfeel. It has some bigness to it. There's a slight little slickness there. You kind of expect some of that with it. It could be a little bit rounder, a little bit bigger compared to Hoegaarden. This is a beer style that can have an archetype in Hoegaarden, but there are other wits out there. An awful lot of them are pub brewed, and they don't all follow the Hoegaarden style.
Yeah.
Again, this kind of goes with judge experience, judge time.
Okay.
I like this beer a lot.
Yeah.
It's good. It could have a little body. It's a little thin, but I think the spices are there, and I would drink. I would have a whole pint of this, maybe even two. Who knows?
Daniela says nay.
No, it's too light for me.
I think it smells better than it tastes. I think that I get you say thin, and I'm with you on thin. I get a real sort of a bland, not very complex taste on my palate. Like, I could say thin and banana.
Mm-hmm.
It would be very simple for me to say that because I can only pick out some simple things.
Yeah.
But I don't get a lot of deep. You said earlier in the last beer, there's some surface things in a beer, and then there's some deep sort of complex things, and I don't get that out of this beer.
This is a beer style that is primarily about the additives to it, the spicing that goes in.
Yeah, because it's all wheat based, basically, right?
It's a wheat beer, but there can be unmalted wheat in it. There can it is not a hoppy beer per se, and it's not a real big barley beer, but. The spice complexity is the chief note to it. And in this case, everything is kind of a top note. Everything's kind of flowery and top notey. Within the body of the beer, within the flavor depth, within the fade, and the aftertaste, it doesn't have a lot of the spice depth that it could have. That could be because the spices were added to a secondary rather than to the actual end of the boil, which is the appropriate place to go. It could also be because this has a significant kind of pithiness to the aftertaste. In this case, the pith is from a bitter orange peel, and it is kind of the balancing bitterness expected in the style, but it doesn't really lend much of a citrus note. You tend to get more of a citrus note out of the coriander.
Yeah. I'm reading through the flavor characteristics here, and in looking at it, there's some things that I see this beer does have. For example, that pleasant sweetness is the first thing it says about the flavor, and I think it does have that. It says often with a honey or vanilla character, and I could give it that along with my banana characteristic. I would actually cross that in with a vanilla thing. And then it asks for sort of a zesty orange citrusy fruitness. If there is orangey citrusy, I wouldn't call it zesty. Now this part's interesting to me. I want to know what you think about this. It says refreshingly crisp with a dry, often tart finish. I don't get a dry finish. I see it kind of lingering around on my palate a bit. Are you no dryness there for you?
Well, dryness is a mouthfeel, and it is reasonably dry. It's drier than I kind of expect in terms of the mouthfeel, but the finish in terms of the alcohol, in terms of the malt complexity, is a little bigger, a little more. Again, the top note thing is what you're really getting, I think, in the fade.
Okay,
because it just stays very geranium, very rosy in in the finish. It's a decent beer. I'd give it a 30 to 31.
Nice, that's good. A great score. It does fit the mouthfeel, I think. Mouthfeel medium light to medium body, and that I think it does have. I guess when I was saying thin, I definitely meant more in the flavor profile. It's not thin on the palate. It doesn't feel that. It has a medium body. Is that right, Kevin? Would you give it that?
Yeah, for style. And that's a relative term.
Okay.
Medium full body, that's a relative term for style.
Okay. That's fair enough.
It's not an absolute.
Says the overall impression should be, this is a very brief description, it should be refreshing, elegant, tasty, moderate strength, wheat-based ale. It is refreshing. I think so. It's a very refreshing beer.
I wouldn't go elegant.
And if this beer was colder, it would be more refreshing.
Okay. That's so our fault there, definitely on that part. I want to mention again the appearance. It does have a little cloudiness to it, but Kevin said not quite enough. And again, that could be that we lagered it in the fridge for quite a while now.
And I wouldn't say fault. These are the things that happen in competition.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. It's going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what this is. I'm excited to show the people this is the stuff that happens, like you said, in competition behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Stuff that you may not plan for.
Yeah.
Will my beer be in a walk-in that's 38 degrees for 2 weeks before it's even shown, but my chest freezer's at 42.
Next beer.
Yeah, let's try this one here. It's going to be, and you can see the style he's put on it right there. It's been sitting out for a little while. I do want to say, Kevin's going to go ahead and prepare those two. This next beer, by the way, is from Push Eject in the chat room. Is he in the chat room
with us
today?
He's not here with us today. That's too bad.
It's Father's Day.
Attention span.
Bastard stepchild's check steam. Ooh, nice
check
hiss.
Oh, that was a great hiss you could hear coming out of that.
Although
Thank
it's
you.
A low fill on the bottle inspection, this barely comes up to the neck of the bottle. We kind of expect a little higher fill. What happens is with too much head space, the beer itself can overcarbonate because there's a balancing act going on between the head space and the pressure actually in the beer. So if you have a limited amount of head space, there's not much to balance.
Okay.
And carbonation is a purely mechanical function. There's no chemistry involved.
Okay. I hope we're not boring you with the taste. I've listened to these other audio. There's a couple podcasts out there, and they just, like, taste beers all the time. They don't do the judging like we're doing here and really go in depth. They just taste a beer. And it bores me. I don't like the tasting thing. So I hope that's not happening. To me, this part's really interesting because of the way – I just hope it translates because I know that we're the one who actually have the beers in front of us, and we get to taste it.
Yeah.
So I hope it translates to you, because to me this is the really kind of good stuff about competitions.
Yeah. Well, like all beers, they're much better in person.
Yeah, exactly.
But after this, we're going to have more, right? It's hard to be
vicarious with beer.
It's an experiment
for us. We're just trying to bring it to you.
I don't really curl up with a good Michael Jackson book. I sort of taste the beer as I'm reading them.
Gotcha.
Now, this one kind of met some expectations. Remember I said about low fill leading to overcarbonation? Look at the size of the head on this particular beer. It is way bigger than expected. It is 3 to 3.5, 4 fingers tall, and compared to the depth of the beer, which is about 1.5 to 2 fingers.
Yeah.
So it is. It's already telling me it's highly overly carbonated, and the.
This one's like super heroic, even.
Well, the head here is white, and it is turning rocky very quickly. It is made up of reasonably large bubbles, almost soda pop-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's got some ding going against it aesthetically. And we're going to get back to this subject as we get into some of these other beers. But aesthetics plays a huge, huge perception part in what you expect from a beer.
Yeah.
Obviously, when it's served to you at a bar, when it's served to you at a home, what you see plays a huge expectation in what you expect from food.
Sure.
Isn't that the case with a person? Isn't that the case with a plate of food?
Yeah.
The way it's presented to you tells you a lot about what it's going to taste like, or at least gives you an expectation.
Yeah. I don't know how JP ever got in here.
Yeah. I don't know how I would taste.
Just that look.
Maybe it was the steaks given to the pit bull.
That could have been it. Okay, what style is this, Kevin? What are we going for?
This would be a specialty just because he's calling it a Czech steam beer, which means he probably used an ale yeast or a lager yeast at ale temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be anything. And here's where brewer creativity comes in. And I'm all for it, and I think it's a good thing. But the brewer has to be able to accept my ability to understand what they're trying to do and my willingness to accept it.
Okay. He does the
apology.
It's
a real spicy nose. Very, very spicy nose. I'm getting a lot of clove and peppery aroma to it.
I'm getting a lot of like a yeasty thing. That's really what I get.
There's a definite yeast signature going on in there. There's a little bready tone going to it, a lot kind of a raw bread dough.
Bready, yeah, that's it. It's hard to find,
a definite sort of almost lambic character in here in that there's a little cattiness. Not from the standpoint of a skunky cattiness, but a cattiness from this form of durian, the weird Asian fruit.
The king of all fruits.
Distinctly cat box odor.
The listener has just joined. Pushy Check just joined, so if you guys have any questions about the beer, we can ask them in the chat room.
Okay. 888-401-BEER, Push, if you want to call in. We're evaluating your beer, and... I got a little surprise for Kevin when he's done evaluating
it. So this has a nearly lambic character to it.
That I agree with. It's got a real strong, sour, wild, yeasty kind of thing happening.
Yeah, which is coming out more. It's like a sour banana if those two things go together.
And the aftertaste, the very aftertaste, gets more and more off. More and more sour on my palate.
Yeah, it's not peppery, but it's definitely sour. It's a lactic
dirty
sourness.
Mm-hmm.
There is a very big earthy component to this.
Earthy.
Kind of that fresh tilled dirt, sort of an earthiness to it,
which I like.
And
I eat dirt.
It's as presented to me as a Czech steam.
Mm-hmm.
When I see Czech, it doesn't tell me the beer style per se.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking Bohemian Pilsner. And when I see steam, I'm thinking kind of a steam treatment to it. What I'm getting here is a very young, kind of straight lambic thing going on that's carbonated. It's not really mature in any fashion there. It's really light. It's sort of lambic light. So if Lindeman's made a light beer, this would be it.
Okay. I think I've got Push on the phone here right now. Hey, Push.
Hey, buddy.
What's happening, brother?
You know what? Father's Day, living large.
Attaboy.
Your kids. Living the dream.
Did your little tiny kids go out and buy you gifts? What are they, like two? Not even two?
They're a buck and a half, and they came running this morning screaming, Daddy, Daddy, Daddy. And you know what? That was all I needed.
Oh.
Nice.
However, they were toting gifts, I have to admit. Thank God.
Hey. I can tell you they do the same thing in college, but it's not the same feeling.
Totally different.
Is that right? And it's just about money. Like, yeah,
exactly.
A car. Yeah.
Here's a great gift, Dad. Can I have $50 for it?
Yeah. One of the gifts they came running in with was Beers of the World. Some big, yeah, it was awesome.
That's
big coffee
great.
Table book.
Those are fun.
All right. Push, I'm going to have to ask you to talk real loud into your phone for me.
You got it.
That's much
nice.
Better.
Nice.
Okay. Kevin. Along with the beer he sent in, he actually sent this to the National Homebrew Competition, and I have his scoring sheets right here as well. So I don't know if you want to keep going on the beer, though.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So definitely some of the same thing. Push, you've been listening to our evaluation so far?
I've been in and out, sorry to say.
Okay.
We just put the girls down for the night.
Well, so we just, mainly as a quick summary, it's a very lambic-y sort of taste that we're getting here, sort of a wild yeasty sourness.
Maybe that's because I shoved my business into the mash tun.
Oh, that might have done it right there. JP, what's your secret to a clean shoving the business in the mash tun?
I find you have to be freshly shorn and highly, highly hammered.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
That's JP's secrets to shoving your business in the mash tun.
You got to get a straight deadlift on it.
Well, the first thing is he entered it into category 10A, which is... Right or wrong,
that's... Yeah.
What is that? It says here American Pale? A Pale is what it says.
It probably should have been a California Common, I guess.
But you put it into American Pale. Is that right?
Yeah.
You did. Okay. Just checking. I want to make sure I got it right, because I'm just reading.
That's American Pale.
Okay. So we entered it into an American Pale. The aroma judge, and I'm just looking at one of these score sheets here, the top one.
I think there were only two.
Okay. It gave it a 6 out of a 12 there. Slightly sour, resiny aroma. You're right about the handwriting, Kevin. Hard to read. Let's see. Could tell aroma. Could have. Okay. Also found a little bit of sulfur. Possibly wondering if it was Pils malt, as the judge said. Sorry. Go on.
No. One thing I want to throw out there is this beer was brewed before I started listening to the Brewing Network.
Ah.
And I'm not just stroking your...
Been a listener for a month now, huh?
Yeah, right. My temperature control is a whole different thing now.
Okay.
And this beer was probably fermented at, I think it was fermented at about 73.
Oh, you went the Crosley fermentation method.
Mm, Crosley Pearl.
That's right, the Crosley Pearl fermentation you did.
Is that what we're calling it now?
Yeah, highly. it comes highly unrecommended.
Yeah. Totally unregulated.
Yes.
So this poor yeast had to work pretty darn hard to get to wherever it got.
Okay.
What kind of yeast did you use?
You know, I should know that.
Let's see.
In my defense, this was not my recipe. We did this at one of our big brew sessions where we taught a few friends how to brew, and my brewing buddy Sven put the recipe together, and I should have it here in front of me, but what can I say? I'm a father of twins. I can barely keep my life straight.
You've actually got several score sheets along with this.
I think there were two.
No?
I think there were two different ones.
There's like five.
I got like four, unless they're copies of all the same one. I'm looking for your yeast because I got his recipe here as well.
Okay.
You want these score sheets, Kevin, while I'm looking for his yeast?
Yeah, let me take a look at them.
Oh, I see. They're stapled. There's two of them stapled together. That's my fault.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so they gave you a low fill.
Yeast. You use the Czech Pils. Y Yeast 2278 Czech Pils.
There you go.
Is the yeast that you used on this guy.
And Sven took half the batch, took it home, and fermented it at lager temperatures. He fermented it really cold.
Yeah.
I didn't have any kind of temperature control at the time. So as an experiment, I fermented it here pretty warm.
Okay. In Lancaster warm, by the way.
Yeah, let me tell you.
That's warm.
And we entered both beers into BNHC.
Okay.
His cold fermented lagered beer and my ale beer.
And how did his do in relation to yours?
If I remember correctly, he got a 28.
Okay.
And I think mine got a 31.
31, okay.
Yeah, so
you know, I'm confused,
there.
And maybe I just don't know anything about the styles. I'm really confused about it being in the American Pale category. Because I wouldn't have put it in that. I would have put it in the closer to that Hoegaarden category.
Help me out. Yeah, I wouldn't. I had no idea. I was staring at it going, this doesn't taste like anything. I don't know where to put it.
Yeah, it got a 32 at the pail.
In there, yeah. Kevin, what category would you have said, would you have put this beer in?
Well, as presented to me right now, in one of the sour ale categories, probably.
A sour ale.
Really?
Probably closer to Lambic right now.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Push, were the ones that you entered, did those have low fills also?
Yeah,
they
that's what's
had
noted.
They all had low fills. This poor beer got dragged through the mud. This was our first attempt at using the beer gun.
Okay.
And I think that we bottled Fenn's first, which was icy cold.
Yeah.
By the time we got to mine, it had warmed up and was very foamy.
Okay.
So those bottles looked pretty full at the time, but
yeah,
by the time they settled down, they were low.
I'll tell you what, I think that Doc's next gadget corner is going to be the beer gun. On the webpage there, he's going to do a full evaluation on it and then how to use it. So everyone who's got the beer gun, especially if you're getting low fills like this, you're going to want to check that out.
Is it just me, or is colder better?
Colder is better. You mean in terms of filling your bottles?
Yeah, that you want the bottles cold and the beer freezing.
Absolutely, because if there's a temperature differential, it's going to delaminate.
Well, I think that's what happened here with us, is that by the time we got to these bottles, they were all warmer, and the fill level just wasn't what it needed to be.
Yeah, I don't think that any bottling should be done in Lancaster during the months between March and November, actually. It's a very long, hot season down there.
Between March and March.
Have you ever attempted a Lambic before?
I have never, no. And God bless you, it's one of my favorite styles to drink.
Yeah.
But the thought of me brewing one, you know what? You're my hero if you think that's a Lambic.
Do you? No, it's a light Lambic, but it wouldn't score well there necessarily either. But the real question is, do you live near any kind of open field or any kind of an orchard?
As a matter of fact, we do. It's open desert everywhere around us.
Yeah.
And the California Aqueduct goes by, and the last time they dredged that, they found, I think, 46 cars and 23 bodies in there. So I'm thinking there's a lot of wild things going on.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing because I used to live near that aqueduct too, and
really?
He's not exaggerating.
It's like the Delta out here.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
And so this has, and you know, I'm sort of generalizing when I call it a lambic-like note to it. It's a Brettanomyces infection that you have. It's in this category, you'd call it a wild yeast. Because you didn't intend it to be there.
It was accidental.
It's true, right. It was a closed fermentation, for sure.
Okay. Yeah, well.
But I do have babies and a lot of diapers around.
Well, there you go. Be careful with those. And thanks for telling us after we drank it.
I didn't have a tea hot bag, so I had to improvise. I had to MacGyver a hot bag.
Yeah. How well do Pampers soak up hops?
This is my poo-poo pail. I enjoy everybody.
Well, luckily, actually, it's more of a pee-pee pail because it doesn't have any Enterobacter, at least, but good.
If you guys only know what I changed this morning.
Oh, stop.
Been there.
Well, it sounds like it's not a terrible beer. It's just certainly not what you intended it to be because there's some wild yeast in there doing its business as well.
Absolutely, and I'm fascinated by hearing your review is worth more than those BJCP sheets I got back, and it's so appreciated.
All right, real quick, Kevin, score in the category he entered it, and then score in the category you think it should be in.
You're in about the 20 category, 19 to 20 category for where you entered it.
For the American Pale,
The American Pale. For what it says on the label here, check steam, if it was a specialty, I'd still probably put you in about the 22 category.
Okay.
And just because anything goes and you get a little bit of a pass on that.
Right.
And insofar as leaving it in Lambic, you're probably in about the 23-24 category.
Okay, great.
There you go.
That's much appreciated, guys.
Thanks, brother, for sending in. I appreciate that. And,
yeah, it was very cool.
And I got a lot more coming to you.
Awesome. You know what? There's another bottle here. We only opened one. And like I said, it's not a bad beer. I'll be drinking this other bottle, my friend.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it.
Thanks, brother.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good day.
Push later on, man.
It's very drinkable.
It is. It's absolutely drinkable. Yeah. It's just the category threw me off for sure. You're right about the wild lambic thing happening.
It's definitely not as funky as some other infected beers I've had the pleasure of coming across over the years. You can definitely drink it.
Okay, here's what we got to do. We got to take a break and give Kevin's palate a rest. And by the way, I want you all to know he's doing what he tells me he's supposed to do at the competitions as well.
What's
which
that?
Is to have bread and water in between each beer. The bread, like we talked about earlier, to scrub the palate, and he's having plenty of water, not just finishing all the samples like JP and I are.
Yeah.
But actually
tasting
them.
Is it bad to swirl the last ounce and chug that?
Yes, I bet.
No, it's only bad for him to gargle.
Okay, good.
Is it bad to beer bong? Is it like all the last bits of every beer we've opened? Is that a terrible thing?
The first judging
to
I went to, I expected
you are,
to find a
if
funnel.
If you want, you can have the dump bucket.
Welcome to do that. When we come back, I think what we're going to do is, hey, let's throw me into the fire. We've done it with our listeners, and they're brave enough to send us their beer. So we're going to judge my beer, which I'm about to send into competition too. Whatever suggestions you have will be great, although I've got no time to change it anyway. But would love to know a preliminary evaluation. I think that's awesome.
What beer is this?
It's the best bitter that Oz and I brewed together. He taught me how to do all grain on the thing.
Beautiful.
And it's my first all grain attempt. It's on tap, so we'll get you whatever sample you want. Maybe you should pour your own sample there and figure out how best it should be poured at that point. And we'll do that and maybe try to squeeze in one more listener beer. It's getting late right now, so maybe just mine. We'll try to get a listener beer in there too. And we'll wrap things up with Kevin Pratt, BJCP National Judge, helping us out doing some evaluations here on the Brewing Network Brewcast. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Brewcasters on the Brewing Network. The Brewing Network, saving your life one beer at a time.
Every time I hear this intro now, I'm just going to miss the Oz hanging out in the United States with us.
That's true. Yeah, that was a good time. Yeah, he came in and then he left.
He was definitely fun and good to have here around for a couple of weeks, and it became part of the Brewcast for sure. So we'll definitely miss having him around. I think he's going to do some Skype sort of broadcasting with us.
But, oh, that'd be cool.
I can never listen to AC/DC the same again.
No,
it's a very different thing.
I just hear John going, I,
and getting the words wrong.
Yeah.
City lights. There's no city lights in the entire song. Kevin Pratt is with us today, BJCP National Judge, and helping us do some beer evaluations of listener beers and getting some real judging done here today.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you coming on the show with us and doing all this with us today.
You're welcome.
What we've got now, we're going to do two more beers. I said we were going to do mine, but we will. We're going to do mine last. We want to get to Beer Bears. Beer Bear sent us his beer not too long ago. We will do a speed judging here because I also have a bunch of questions just to throw at you real quick, and then we'll wrap up the whole show.
Good.
Beer Bear sent us two different styles of beer, and overall, there's as Kevin said earlier, there is actually a bottle judging part of the evaluation.
Sure, yeah.
And Beer Bear's beer are a perfect example to jump into that part. So.
Yeah, there's something here that needs to be said. When you are entering competition, bring your A game and essentially look at your beer as if it's a resume. It's a representation of your best work.
Mm-hmm.
And start with the bottle. If the label is not completely cleaned off, if there's still gum there, if there's still bits of label there, or the label itself is entirely there, how good do you think I'm going to think the beer is inside? How much do you think I think you care about your beer? Because it's awfully hard to sanitize a bottle thoroughly and have a label stay on.
Mm-hmm. So in competition, that's definitely something you want to look for. In Beer Bear's defense, of course, he didn't know he was competing with this beer. He sent it to us to enjoy. So no faux pas on your part, but an excellent point that if you are going to send your beer into competition, make it look nice. Make the bottle cap not be some random cap that you found on the side of this the corner. Of course, the sanitation issue of not having the labels off of your beer is an excellent point that Kevin makes. And Doc has talked about that in here before.
Yeah.
That it is really hard to get a beer sanitized because things can hide within the grains of that paper and all sorts of stuff. So you definitely want to get all of that stuff scrubbed out. I would even go so far as to say if you're going to put it into competition, go to your local homebrew shop and go ahead and buy a 6-pack or a 12-pack of brand new brown bottles.
$10 well spent.
Yeah, and just to make them look real nice.
Yeah, use the recycled ones for your own deal.
Beer Bear, in your case, no harm, no foul, because you're not sending your beer into competition, but we just decided to make an example there because we got four bottles of beer from Beer Bear. Only one of them he wants us to judge, and that is his, it should be in the Munich Helles style, Kevin, is what we're evaluating here. And I'll tell you everything else about it after we go into it.
Yes, and it's a gusher.
It was a nice hiss, and it did, it gushed right out the top there. Which I think may be a mention here later in the... He gave me a whole nice description of the beers that he has going on. This is Beer Bear, long-time listener. And
as we sit and let this sit now, I have poured a little bit in the glass, and the head is climbing the bottle, which is right now close to half empty.
Which is definitely the sign of a gusher, which is a little more than just an over-carbonated beer. The gusher sort of leads to a bit of an infection and means that some wild yeast or other things were going crazy
Something's
in there.
Something's working inside the bottle.
And making it go a little nutty.
The foam in this did climb the glass pretty high, and then it also has dissipated very quickly. It is now very soda-like. It dissipated into a rocky end to it, and it did not hold even as a collar around, which would just be foam forming a ring right at the glass line.
Okay.
It is amber in color with a haziness to it.
Which is not the Helles style.
Not the Helles style. No, it's also dark to style. This is sort of a caramelly amber where you would expect it to be a little more towards the straw.
Okay. And Beer Bear, I know what you're thinking. Hang in there. I got you, buddy. Let us do. We're
going to
do the evaluation, and then I'm going to fully explain what's happening here. So just hang in there, buddy.
There's a giant buttery note to it. There's a vegetal thing going on there too, sort of like a rotten cooked cabbage.
Yeah, I got that.
And this is just aroma, by the way, so far.
Like a bubblegum kind of thing.
Correct.
I get all that. It smells a bit like bean dip.
Like seven layer or just straight?
No, bean? like straight Frito-Lay bean dipped in the can.
Oh, the high quality stuff.
Would I be allowed to put that?
That's a flavor memory I don't have.
Could I put? See, you obviously didn't go through that those odd college top ramen and bean dip years.
Oh,
that
believe
I did.
Me, I ate a lot of ramen, but,
but not the bean dip.
At least not Frito-Lay.
It does. That. It has that metal canister bean dip flavor. JP, help me out here. You know the bean dip.
I do know the bean dip very well.
And you smell it or not?
I don't smell it. No, I get more bubble gum and kind of the kind of cooked vegetable, cooked spinach kind of a deal over the bean dip. But hey, it's all relative,
it
man. I will stand up for you.
Appreciate that. Okay, now Kevin is doing the tasting as well, which I will do. And I'm going to be honest. I'm actually a little nervous about tasting it, Beer Bear, because it has it's a rough smell. It's a rough aroma. I'm going to do it anyway.
Because you're a man.
Because I'm a man.
It's really very watery thin, and there's no hop to speak of. There is a little bit of a Munich malt note to it, a little melanoidin thing going on. Or it could be a Vienna malt, too, but I can get either one of those confused. It's hard to tell.
Because they're both biscuit. No. It definitely, there's that malt kind of there, and then it just goes away. And down the center of my tongue.
Extremely thin and watery.
Down the center of my tongue, it dissipates, and on the side I get some stuff, and then they kind of get some banana thing going on. It's really weird.
There's a little slickness going on the side, but I'm not getting any solventy or any real sourness per se. It's just extraordinarily highly attenuated, which would account for the prodigious head that we had.
Prodigious. I like that word.
I'm usually pretty diplomatic about the beers we get in here. And again, Beer Bear, don't worry. I got your whole explanation here, too.
You're all
so
over
I
it.
Got you. But I guess since the lowest score you're supposed to give is a 13, this is my 13 of this is my 13.
I don't score it that low.
No? You going higher than that? That I want to hear. Tell us about the good things about it that give you above a 13. That's a great...
It's not a particularly great beer. It's got a number of flaws, but what happens in the aroma, the vegetal, the slightly well, for lack of a better term, the kind of the baby barf kind of note to it, or I would probably write that as a feta cheese note.
I like baby barf.
And, well, you can't write some of this stuff. I mean, you could, but you...
Okay, let me write this down. You can't write farty, and you can't write baby barf.
Well, because it presupposes that a person has actually tasted these things.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a big controversy years ago where somebody wrote, tastes like cat piss. And which presupposes that the person has actually tasted cat piss.
Good point, yeah.
And, and ought to be master enough to know the cat.
That's an excellent point, actually. Yeah. I wonder if I would have been that guy to argue about that. Hey, if you say it's cat piss, it must, you must have tasted it.
Yeah, there's certain colloquial things that you can...
I wouldn't be that guy.
No.
So, you know, you find alternative things. That's where the durian note comes from. I'll taste durian, but I've never eaten a cat box.
Yeah, yeah.
And nor will I ever.
Okay, so positives here that give you above a 13.
So this doesn't have any overt sourness. This doesn't have any overt notes. It's not peppery. It's not vinyl-y. It's not got any tremendously bad flavor problems. It just doesn't have any flavor. And the fact that I can pick up on some of the biscuitiness of malts used means there isn't anything else standing in the way.
John has been vindicated.
Okay. All right, final score?
This is about a 19 to 20.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Really, JP?
I swear to God.
Okay. Okay, let me come to Beer Bear's defense here and say something before I do it as well. Beer Bear and this beer, and what he says as well, is the prime example of why you should send us your beer. Not because it's awesome beer, although we would love to have awesome beer too. And there's been a couple of times where people have sent us some things that were just absolutely incredible, and we were happy to have them. So please don't be discouraged to send us incredible beer. But one of the things we've said since the beginning is that we're here to help. So send us beer that you need help with, and we can give you something out of it. And that's exactly what Beer Bear did as well as state it in his note here. He says, this is his Munich Helles that I made, and the main concern that I have, that he says, I really messed it up. It's still drinkable, which I think we've kind of said here too, at least... actually, I wouldn't. I don't know if I would drink it. But Kevin and JP both said, you know, it's up above the 13. But he says he needs some help. He brews it okay, he thinks. The first problem came out when he started fermenting it at ale temperatures. It fermented at 70 degrees for about 14 days at that temperature. Says he tried to cool it for about two days, but he doesn't have the ability to lager. I use the lager yeast, but at ale temps. I use the recipe that I enclosed, but use ProMash to scale it up. And then, of course, he said we can email him with any other questions we have. I can't think of anything else but that it was bottle conditioned and kept at room temp, again, for about 3 weeks before it became drinkable.
Now, did you also try the other bottle that he sent to us? Because I told you that the labeled one is the one that he had a real problem with, and the other one he wanted us to try, too. Without the label.
Now, are you sure?
So, in other words, what is if what I'm hearing is he says this is varying from bottle to bottle?
Yes.
Oh, okay, you're
then
right.
Clearly,
he says he has problems with both.
Then clearly, the symptom we're having here of not removing the labels means that the bottles are not being properly cleaned.
Okay.
If they're varying, and what's happening is once you pick up an infection from one bottle, you're inoculating every other bottle in line.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Okay.
Well, that's a good point.
Fair enough. And then obviously I just read the description of the wrong beer, if that's what you're saying, Daniela, though.
Yeah, that's why I left the one without the label on here, so that you would try that too. Because that's the one with a smaller problem.
Okay. So the one that we just tasted then, what a retard I am. The other beer I sent, he says, is his first attempt at two things. And it, see, this fucks up everything. It's just very confusing. You guys, here, let me say this, first of all, and I'm not blaming anybody here. When you send us beer, you definitely have to, and I said this before, you gotta put the label on every single beer with your name and what beer it is.
Sure.
And it's not because you guys are retarded, it's because I'm retarded.
Yeah.
So I get all these beers, I got a fridge full of stuff, and then I'm trying to get all these tastings together, and I screw it up like I just did. So please keep sending us beer, we'd love to have it and do these bits, and also please, I know that you send me letters along with them. It doesn't matter. Label each beer with what your name and what beer it is, because I totally screwed this up. Okay, so this beer was not a Munich Helles at all.
Right. This is the explanation. There are two different batches, yeah. And the one without the label is supposed to be the Munich Helles, which is supposed to be tried. And
well, that's what we did.
You did not try the one without the label.
Yes, we did.
Yes, we tried the one without a label.
Oh, you did?
That's exactly what we did.
That was my question, and it's you guys said no. Okay, then we're good. Then we're all good.
Strike that. Reverse it.
What time is it, for fuck's sake?
It's time to get ill, baby.
Okay, good. So I didn't entirely screw it up, but my speech still stands. Please label each individual beer. Label. Yeah. Send us the letter with all the description. I love that. That's great. And label each individual beer. You should see our fridge. It's loaded with listener beers. Okay, well, good. This is a good thing. We did not screw it up. It was supposed to be as Munich Helles. It was all those things I just said. You certainly fermented it too hot, especially with a lager yeast. Mm. You're going to get lots of off flavors. The gushing, what do you think about that, Kevin? Where'd that come from?
That came from additional bottle conditioning inside. Okay. The thinness of the body, all the proteins are being broken down in this, which is why there's no foam stand to this.
Okay.
It's not creating a sourness, just something is working off the proteins, working off whatever residual trisaccharides may be in there. And it's not putting off an acid, per se. It's putting off perhaps a side alcohol or something else,
okay.
which isn't presenting itself in a way that's tasteable yet. This is a good example of what bottle sick can be, meaning it changes from bottle to bottle.
Yeah.
It's just plain old sanitation issues here.
Okay. Ozzy, I got you on the air. Hang in there a second, all right, buddy?
No worries, man.
All right. Okay. So just some general sanitation things going on with this, and then obviously the problems that you stated yourself, Beer Bear, with the high fermentation of the lager. Daniela and I would love to do a nice Helles, any sort of a lager beer, but are not doing it because we totally understand we don't have a fermentation control going on here. We don't have a fridge to put it in. And I could do the plastic, but the way I do my ales anyways, I put them in a plastic garbage pail,
mm-hmm.
and I put water and ice in there.
Yeah.
And that allows me to control it to keep my Cal Ale yeast and stuff around, 65 degrees. It's
right.
Great at doing that.
Oh, yeah.
I know that I could, if I was very vigorous, Daniela, about really kind of sticking to it. I know I could lager the same way, but I'd really have to ice it the whole time
yeah.
and maintain it, and I'm not willing to
I think it'd be really hard to keep that narrow window, of 5 degrees or whatever it is with just a bunch of ice.
Yeah.
Well, at least give it a shot, because a dirty lager is better than a clean ale when it comes to lager styles.
I disagree with that. I think that a dirty, I would much rather, I don't know, yeah. I guess you'd have to be a real fan of the lagers, I think, to stick to that, philosophy. Because, to me, a dirty lager can, in fact, I'm almost willing to say that a dirty lager is worse than a dirty ale, even. Because a dirty ale, and I guess we're just talking about, I guess when I say dirty, we're talking fermentation temps and stuff.
Yeah, we're talking
about dirty
ale
will get real fruity. Now that's something else. You're just going to get
messy.
But to me, a lager is just supposed to be so clean and nice that if it's dirty, it's just so off.
I think you can still get that. You can get clean and nice and still have kind of a higher ester kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it depends on, I think, your malt bill.
Yeah. I guess I'm saying I'd rather taste the higher esters in an ale where they're not allowed than I would in a lager where they're not allowed.
Like an English style.
Only because lagers can tend to go a little sulfury.
Yeah.
But, I think that a well-conditioned lager done at slightly warm temperatures tastes better than an ale at cooler temperature for a lager style.
Okay, I got you.
Huh.
No, that's fair.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that is fair. So, Beer Bear, there's your evaluation. It wasn't a 13. It was a 19 or a 20, and definitely a couple things that you got to work on in there. And
but he knows it, and that's cool.
Yeah, a really giant thank you for having the nuts to send it and get an evaluation, because that's the point. We're not knocking on anybody's beer.
No.
I bet you that Beer Bear's got some beer in his fridge that's just awesome. So
sure.
But he didn't send it. He sent us kind of to the point. Help me out with this beer, and that I appreciate. And that's you're making a statement that's what we're going for.
He does two things. He does three things. He brings it strong, right?
Thank you.
He's reinforcing stuff that he probably already knows, about his beer, because he told it to you, right?
Yeah.
But he's also stepping up to the plate and allowing himself to be an example to teach other people.
Absolutely.
And that's great. That's what we all need as homebrewers, is people to say, hey, I'll give it a shot. Here's my beer. It's flawed. How do I fix it?
Yes. All right, we gotta move. We gotta move. Oz, how are you, brother? You're on the air.
I'm good, mate. How are you guys?
Oz, doing great. How's Australia treating you out there?
Sounds like a blast, man. Let's all go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. We're about to evaluate the beer that you helped me brew here, buddy.
Nice, excellent.
Okay. Let's go ahead and do this one now. This one I brewed as a best bitter, and everyone who has tried it, I won't tell you what everyone said. This is one I brewed as the best bitter, and I'm not going to tell you what style I would have entered it as. We'll go ahead and reverse the scenario here a little bit, and you just tell me what style. And then please give me the full rundown, rip-apart evaluation, no holds barred with this particular beer.
The sulfur that was in it when I was first poured has dissipated at this point, so it's been sitting here for as long as we've been discussing the other beer.
Mm-hmm.
What's there now is sort of a pleasant nuttiness with a little bit of a tropical fruit.
Hmm.
And it's like an almond kind of a note to it, which is a lot more pleasant than the sulfuriness I had before.
Okay. Your first pour, you got a big sulfur smell to it?
Big sulfur.
JP?
I didn't get that, but then again, admittedly, I didn't smell it right when I poured it. I kind of just came back around here. But I can see the tropical fruit thing going on.
I expect a little more of a flowery ester to it, a little more fruit. And I would also expect a little more of a caramel note to the nose that isn't there.
Okay. Assuming it's a best bitter, you're saying? These things. Yeah, okay. It's not farty, is it?
No, it's not farty, but it's queefy.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay, good.
Can handle that.
And the malt is very clean, rather neutral, and lacks any real specific character to push it in any one direction. The hopping is present, but it is harsh and unrefined, just kind of coats the back of the tongue and sits there, but doesn't really crisp the beer very much.
Okay.
Almost that kind of high alpha, it's a subdued version of sort of a high alpha hop.
Okay.
Harshness. And the aftertaste or the afterfeel to it as I drink, it's a little bit warming. Not quite towards fusel, but on the high alcohol end of it, of the scale.
It was up there a little bit, Oz? And the alcohol
it
content?
It was, yeah. We did have some fermentation temp problems there.
Yeah.
That was one thing I was going
to... There's a little bit of a fattiness to it, a little loose. The body of it is just a little bit big and viscous.
Okay.
Where you would expect it to be a little bit drier.
And you call that fattiness, right?
Kind of a fatty feel. Yeah, that kind of feeling you have with, you know, pork fat or fat in your mouth.
It's a little thick and oily and kind of sticks around like that.
Yeah, a lighter version of what happens after you have a little bacon.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Okay.
I'm with that.
You're picking up what he's putting down?
I'm buying what you're selling, Kevin. All right, final score?
Well, as I have it now,
yeah.
This is in the 28, 29 carat.
Well, there you go, dude.
Don't dare you. Let me see. Let me see what that is. You said 28, 29?
It's high for good, right?
It's high good. Yeah, a satisfactory beer that generally fits style. Now, is this assuming best bitter?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That generally fits style parameters, scores near the upper end of this range, have a few minor flaws, slightly out of style. Okay.
It's a little light for the style.
Okay. Now, and this is something that a lot of homebrewers do. They enter one beer into a couple of different styles.
Sure.
What I've been told is to enter this as a pale ale. I've been told two things. I've been, A, enter it as a pale ale. The other thing I was told was to dry hop it and then enter it as an American pale ale. So, first, what other category would you put it in? And second, what would you judge it in that category?
No, I think you're in the English parallel to English ordinary bitter.
Okay.
Category. It's got a distinctly English profile to the hops.
Okay. They're all English hops.
Yeah, it's really kind of, it's got a distinctly English. It doesn't have any of the American citrusiness to it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the malt backbone that's expected. One of the hallmarks of English style beers is they tend to be mellower, rounder, more mature, whereas American style variations of the same thing are brighter, fresher, tend to be a little more out of control in terms of, you know, the flavors are far more sharply defined.
Yeah.
That's our American in general.
I know right where the hop ends and the malt begins kind of thing. With the English style, it all kind of melds together.
That's a good point. I mean, how old is this beer? It's only 2-3 weeks old, right?
I don't know, Oz. How old is it?
2 weeks. Just it was filtered, I think, the Friday before. It was last Friday, yeah. We filtered that.
Got a kangaroo there.
Sounded like he just got beat up by a kangaroo.
Tied his wallaby down over there.
I've got a really, really bad line here. This is quite really playing up.
Okay.
So, Kevin, do you think that that kind of harsh bitterness, I don't know if it's fair to say that, but that kind of bitter would round out a little bit more with age, maybe a month or something like that?
It's hard to know. I kind of doubt that it's going to. It's certainly not going to clean up.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It might mellow out a little bit. But this has pretty decent hop flavor to it, which helps add to the body. And you don't want that to fade. And if the bitterness is going to fade, certainly the body part's going
to
fade.
Tell you what, I'm interested to see your scores when they come back from the comp.
Yeah, me too. And now I might take the dry hop and pale ale advice on the other keg I got too. And actually, I can enter twice because I can bottle up this one as it is and go the bitter that I brewed it, and then I might dry hop the other keg and take Jamil's advice to dry hop it and enter it as an APA in another category. And the difference about the other keg, too, is that I cast conditioned it. This one I force carbed and filtered and got it ready. The other one's just put it right into the keg and been cast conditioning it since. So I might get a couple be able to enter in a couple styles out of this. What do you think of that, Kevin?
Sure.
Yeah? Good idea.
I think that's all a part of brewing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Kind of figure out what I can do, and then I'm even more interested in how it scores because now I can take this one and like you just said, JP, and figure out how it scores as just as Kevin said, and then take the other one and it'll be a totally different beer too. And see what the
it'll be different. Yeah.
Oz.
Yes.
I hope I win. I hope I win something.
Are you gonna put Oz's name down as the assistant brewer or?
I bet he doesn't.
You as the assistant brewer, since Oz actually brewed it. And
No. Justin did the brew. I saw it.
I'm not even going to.
Oz was assisting.
If I win the whole thing, I'm not even going to mention Oz. I won't even. I
want his name stricken from the record.
Oz who? That'll be my response, huh?
Look, it comes down to who cleaned out the mash tun.
Shit.
Well, only because you're stronger, Oz. That's why.
Yeah. It's just because you had a larger plumber's crack bending over my mash tun. So I evaluate who has to clean.
I always thought mash tun cleaners were the assistants.
See? He is the assistant. See?
Really?
There you go.
Oh, really? That's how we do it in America, Oz. I don't know about down there.
Okay.
All right. Hang in there with us, Oz, because I'm going to I just want to get some questions answered, and we're getting out of here, Kevin.
Okay. Rapid fire style, right?
This is like a long judging competition for you, huh, buddy? It's like a marathon. Okay. Let's see what I got here. We'll just do them real quick. Short answers, short questions.
I will say it's a good beer. Just want to say that.
When judging for clarity, does it matter if the beer has been bottle conditioned? Do you take it into account when judging for clarity?
Sure.
You do. And that is something that we're supposed to tell you when we put that beer in? This one's been bottle conditioned?
Clarity is clarity. We're going to look at that and say, well, is it brilliantly clear, which is absolutely you can see through it? Is it slightly hazy, light haze, something like that? And how does that fit during style? For instance, you can have a brilliantly clear American IPA, but it may have a slight haze from hopping, not from yeast.
Yeah.
If the sediment is getting into the beer, we may note that because that's not going to wind up being a good flavor profile.
Okay. Another question. These are all listener questions, by the way. You can always join the chat room during our show and do this yourself. How difficult is it to judge the specialty beer category? And this I said earlier, I think it'd be tough.
Oh, I think so, too.
It's not so much difficult as it is scary, because you just don't know what you're going to get.
This is teabag
stuff. Get everything from Oz's brewery.
But the brewer, in this case, has a big advantage over the judge. This is one of those categories where you can name what it is you're tasting in the beer and say, that's what I did.
Gotcha. Okay. And is this a category that it is it completely acceptable to read a full description of the beer before you taste it?
No, because if you read the category, it's open to pretty much anything the brewer wants to say. It's pure creativity in the specialty category.
And we have done away with the ability to say it has to have a particular base beer.
Okay.
Because too easy was it for a lot of judges to cop out and say, well, you know what, it's got great Christmassy notes to it as a Christmas beer, but it's not much of a brown ale.
Okay.
And score it low for that. That's a cop out. And the fact of the matter is that you have to look at how well the beer balances.
Yeah.
And in that case, you really are kind of going for a judge's palate. What's going to be tasty?
Yeah.
And that makes the best kind of specialties.
Now, that I really like about that particular category, because
yeah.
it does kind of cross over to away from the this is a style, that's a style. And you're allowed to say, is it a good beer or is it not a good
right.
beer?
Yeah, you know, is with it, what it, you've done.
Is it balanced? Did you get this? Did you get that? And I like that. That's
yeah.
a great category to
but
have.
But it's important, too, because you might make an interpretation of style. Let's say you've got, you know, fruit beer is a better example of this because the fruit flavor can change dramatically. Are we talking about a fresh fruit flavor to something, or are we talking about a cooked fruit flavor?
Yeah.
Jammy or ripe or overripe or underripe.
Okay. This person says, they have everyone who tastes my beer, skilled palate or not, fill out a BJCP score sheet.
Is that John?
And he says, I think that helps everyone. Wants to know what you think about it. First thing I want to say is, I don't ever want to, like, can't you just ever drink a beer?
Don't ever invite me to your house.
I just like that he says everyone
not
who tastes
everyone.
It has to.
Everyone. I put down everyone, but a lot of people
oh.
who come to evaluate and try
okay.
your home, his home brews, Rich
okay.
just likes to have them
so
fill out the sheet so that they actually know what they could taste.
Okay,
you know?
Well, that's not bad.
That's not
I'm just like, you can't have a beer unless you fill the sheet. What do you
hey,
think
grandma.
About that practice, Kevin?
Well, it depends. Is he trying to educate his drinkers, or is he trying to educate himself?
He says
his
he thinks
drinkers.
It helps everyone. So maybe even himself as well. You know, it's kind of an all-around thing.
No, but I think it's mainly for educating people's palates, you know, and just make it easier on them how to describe things.
I'm all for beer education.
So good work, Rich. You keep handing out those style sheets. I like that. That's a good
yeah.
idea. As long as it's not like, man, like, do you want a beer? Yes, fill out the sheet.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I would fill out the sheet for him, but I'm all for beer education.
You so really so even as a judge, if he gave you a beer and a sheet, you'd say, not
yeah,
gonna.
That's a little bit too much putting me on the spot.
Yeah,
I know. I mean, because then it becomes, well, you filled this out, and then when I entered it in category, you said this.
Yeah.
Or something else entirely.
Oh, I see. Because you, okay, now that makes sense because you're a judge as well. Because me, if he really wanted me to, I'd totally do it. But then he can't call me on anything because I'm not judging it in competition either. That's a good point, Kevin. All right. Now this one's kind of broad, so take it as you will. The question is, do you agree with all the commercial examples given for whatever particular style? Because
wow.
they do give commercial examples for every style.
Oh, okay.
I guess to say, do you agree with all of them?
Yeah, like, wow.
But it's a question.
I don't know.
Okay.
Because I haven't tasted them all.
Okay. The ones that you have tasted, do you find more often than not, okay, this is a good example of style?
I've had disagreements with style.
Yeah.
With examples given for style.
Percent disagree to agree?
Less than 0.5% disagree.
Okay. Well, that's, yeah,
good.
You're pretty much in agreement. Okay. Okay, these are good questions here. What are the most popular categories that are entered, and then the least popular categories?
Oh, dear God.
Is that,
wow.
is that just too wide? Or?
Well, it's regional,
oh, okay.
first off. It's highly regional. Beer follows trends. Whatever's being written about, you can expect to see come up. You know, whatever Zymergy and BYO write about, that's what's going to show up the next 3 months.
Okay.
But in general, you can't get away from American IPA. In general, you can't get away from pale ale. In
yeah,
general,
yeah.
you can't get away from brown ale. You can't get away from typically foreign stouts. I'm really surprised at how few a number of brown porters show up. I'm really surprised that there's no Southern English browns. I'm really surprised that there's very, very few Baltic porters that come up. I'm really surprised that there's very few English barley wines showing up in competition, and a whole lot of American barley wines.
Okay. Want to play Stump the Judge?
Yeah.
You ever listened to the show before, Kevin?
Nope.
The correct answer was all the time.
Yeah. So that's, we stumped him, right? We win.
We usually play Stump the Brewer. We have a lot of professional brewers in here,
you bet.
And we play a game Stump the Brewer. So I don't have any prizes to give away today, but we'll do a Stump the Judge anyway. Very quickly, Stump the Judge question is, what category, they listened to your earlier dilemma, what category is 6B?
Well, that's why I have the style guidelines in front of me.
It's funny because that's why I was saying they listened to the beginning of the show, because you even were saying, like, I still got trouble with the actual statistical.
Yeah.
Like,
and the question came pretty early on.
Right after that. Yeah. Those bastards.
But
take a stab.
6B is a hybrid category, and I believe that it's blonde ale.
Oh, blonde ale is correct. Nice work.
We actually said that in the beginning, too.
No, stumped.
We were talking about hybrids. And,
I don't remember.
Six.
How would I
6B. There you go.
Know?
You got it.
Listening. Thanks.
Okay. Last question I'm going to do for the day, and I don't know how to pronounce this mead that you gave to me earlier, Daniela. Do you want to do this question?
I don't know. Chadwiga mead? Chadwiga mead?
J-A-D.
W-I-G-A.
That sounds like it's a Finnish or a Swedish type
of
mead.
Yeah, somebody just wanted to know if you've had it and if you had any opinion about this specific mead.
I would love to try it. I would love to have more examples of mead. I think there's a giant gap in the ability for people to taste good commercial examples of mead and cider versus what they're actually producing. This is one of those places where home mead makers and home cider makers are really cutting edge. They're really the ones doing all the investigative work. They're the ones who really understand the flavors going on. And as a judge, I don't have that many opportunities to try them because there aren't that many entries.
Yeah.
And I'm under the gun at the time because I got to try to judge it. But more importantly, there just aren't that many good, nationally known commercial examples.
Mm.
And I do travel around a lot, but I got to tell you that Norway's not exactly driving distance for me.
Really?
I think it's the whole lack of a bridge thing.
Well, I was watching the Discovery Channel the other day.
Something new.
Like mega structures or something, and they're talking about a bridge going across the Atlantic.
Have they been talking about that for
years? There's your bridge over troubled waters.
I'm looking forward to that. It's gonna, maybe it was even under the Atlantic. I don't know. But it's going to be a high-speed train. And
yeah,
listen,
man.
If it's on the Discovery Channel, it can't be false.
You should hear the way you're talking. Yeah, it's going to be a high-speed train, brother.
I'll tell you, as soon as it gets to Discovery or History, I'm the nerdiest guy you're ever going to meet.
Yeah.
Like the history of paint.
Oh, what
history
a
good paint!
Yeah, well, you know how they have the modern marvels,
Jesus, dude.
It's modern marvels, and
modern
he
marvels.
He would not speak to me for an hour because he had to watch.
You were watching the history of paint drying.
Well, listen, it does sound like a ridiculous thing, but think about how everything around you is painted. Don't you want to know, like, when people started painting stuff?
No,
I do. Like, it's everything's painted.
Can I take a guess at it real quick? Probably when the cavemen were drawing on stuff, that was a pretty color, and they decided to make the whole wall that one color. That's pretty much it, right?
Well, you're close,
well,
but that was more for communication. There's some lots of stuff around paint. Like, you don't think it's just, you can't watch the history of paint, but you're taking for granted your surroundings.
I apparently.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you for opening
paint.
My eyes.
Yeah. Here, Oog, rub yourself in this red stuff here, and then run up against that wall.
And I will videotape it. Wait, what?
I'm looking forward to the history of toothpaste. Oz, you were with me when you were here.
You really bored when I come home, didn't you?
Come on, we were all about the History Channel and stuff. Oz was like, man, I wish I had this stuff at home, too.
Yeah, the history of, like, the koala bear.
Yeah, that's what he was looking for.
History of 4x4.
Just to go back to the topic real quick and talk about beer or the meat, it's a Polish meat brewed by monks. That's what the information I got now, so it's from Poland.
Cool.
So if anybody wants to check it out, and that's
what
it's called, to Chadwiga meat.
There you go.
Oh, on thegotmead.com. Yeah, that's a great site. Oh,
okay, great. So now I had another request. A few of our listeners want to know about our itinerary and going to Florida. What are we going to do?
Okay, let me wrap up with that. Oz, are you good, brother?
I'm good.
All right. Thanks for calling in, helping out with our little our beer discussion. Thanks for helping me brew that. I will give you credit in the competition only if we win. If we lose, I'll take the fault myself.
Really?
Yeah, but it's only a 29 beer. I don't want my name on it.
See, that's what I'm thinking, too, but I got to enter this thing, so what are you going to do?
Put it in Jameel. Put it under Jameel.
That'd be funny. I'm going to enter it under JP, actually.
Hey, that would be an improvement. Man.
I think it would be fun to have a competition where everybody entered under Jameel's name and just see how it goes.
And, like, they just automatically win based on the namesake. Is that what you're saying, Kevin?
Well, you know, Jameel's bound to get more
more awards, but we'll all get a good laugh.
Yeah, we
so,
will.
So, Kevin...
Look, Jamil's beer scored a 20. Yeah.
So, I have a question. If you, because I'm going to enter myself to this brew, to this homebrew competition that we want everybody to enter anyways. Yeah. Jess and I are going to enter to this specific homebrew
competition.
In July. End of July, I believe it is, right?
Yeah.
When's the submission date?
July 21st is
July 21st. So, I'm going to submit my blonde ale. Would you, as a judge, feel weird about it already because it's submitted by a girl?
No.
Not at all?
Not at all.
Do you get a lot of submissions by females?
Well, actually, there's an entire competition for female brewers called Queen of Beers in Placerville. It was started by a woman who is now a master judge and a writer, Beth Zingary. It started to feature female brewers. It's one of the best competitions I ever go to. I enjoy the heck out of it. It is so popular that judging is by invitation only.
Oh, really?
So it's really a great, great competition.
Beautiful.
I think more women should be brewing. I would love, I absolutely love the fact when I run across a woman who enjoys good beer and wants more education about it. I just, I can't do enough for her.
So you're
going to
give me some credit when I enter in July because I'm a girl?
Well, I won't know your
name. I'm
trying
to compete against the guys.
I won't know your name.
You don't put the name.
So it's just the beer against the beer. We don't know the names of the people that,
really?
That judge. Or that, that have entered. And we shouldn't know the name.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's correction, this beer can, for the competition we're talking about, go to hopheads.com, can be entered all the way up until the 28th of July, which is the Friday right before the competition.
Terrific. They'll we got our vouchers here, right, for that?
Yes, they'll be up on the website. My web guy's working on it now, and we'll be up there. You get a $1 off by taking a coupon from our website and entering your beer. Please get them ready. You are helping out the Brewing Network by entering this competition. Competition at hopheads.com.
And under the BN name, too, right?
Well, the coupon will get you that. So.
Okay.
You could actually put it under your own homebrew club as long as you enter this coupon, and then they'll know that you came from the Brewing Network.
Mm.
Although I wouldn't mind if everybody put the Brewing Network as their club, because that's, I want to see us sweep the...
it came
yeah,
from the Brewing
the
Network.
Yeah, BN wins everything.
The award ceremony. So there you go. Oz, thanks, brother.
No worries, mate. I'll catch you next week.
All right, watch out for the dingoes, man.
And the dingleberries, Oz.
See ya. Dingo.
What about the head? Didn't we not say something about the loofah head?
What?
With that homebrew competition,
oh,
too?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Can we do this now? Yeah, we can do this now.
Yeah, you should.
I don't know if I want to know about loofah head.
4-hour show today. Another
couple
marathon.
Of announcements to make. What can you do?
Quick announcements.
I'm
that's
not
right.
feeling it, so.
The Jane hat. You've all seen the hat in the forum. If you haven't, please go to thebrewingnetwork.com, click on the forum button, and look at all of our listeners' avatars. It is the latest trend in headwear fashion.
Sweeping the nation.
We have an official Brewing Network Jane hat. It's made by one of our great listeners' wife, as a matter of fact. Linux Elf, his wife, made the hat and donated it to Oz, who in turn donated it to the Brewing Network, not because he didn't love it, but because the entire Brewing Network loves it, and we've come up with a great thing. JP, you know about the Stanley Cup.
Oh, yeah. You mean the one that will never be in San Jose?
Exactly. Yeah. But there's only one Stanley Cup.
That's right.
And it gets passed around from year to year for whoever wins the competition.
That's right. And everyone gets a day with the thing.
That's right. And there's no, like, there's not 25 Stanley Cups. There's one. Well, there is only one official Brewing Network Jane hat, and we would like to see it tour the world. So we're not talking about a yearly thing here. We're talking about, it's hardly a competition, somewhat. What you need to do is let us know what you're going to do with the hat, where you're going to, and you have to take pictures, you have to take care of the hat. Brewer's nice. Code, this hat is a sacred thing to the Brewing Network. If you look at the forum, you know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
We want this to travel, we want the hat, for the Brewing Network's sake, to travel the world. For example, if you're going to be going to Paris, write us up and say, I'm going to Paris, I want the Jane hat, I want the BN Jane hat, I'll take a picture of it at the top of the Eiffel Tower.
Beautiful.
These are the kind of things we're looking for.
Yeah.
For our very first delivery of the Jane hat, it is right now within the Brewing Network studios. It is safely encased in its protective sheath right here at the Brewing Network studios.
I think Biscuit's chewing on it, right?
The first person that we want to have the Jane hat, we want them to be at the National Homebrew Competition with us this week. Later on this week. It starts on Thursday and goes through to Saturday.
So we'll take it out there.
We will bring it. We'll bring it to you. So we need you to be at the National Homebrew Competition. We need you to tell us what you're going to do, where you're going to take pictures of this hat in Orlando, Florida. And it could be at the competition, or you could be more creative. The most creative person that's going to be at the NHC that will take pictures with this hat is going to win the very first official Traveling Jane hat.
Now, can...
No.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Just
not.
Listeners.
Okay, she got it right.
Yes, yeah. Only listeners can do this. It's all listener. It's your hat. It is the Stanley Cup of the Brewing Network.
That's right.
And from the NHC, you will take the hat home with you. We will not take it home with us to the Brewing Network. You will take it home with you. You will obviously keep it within its protective
right.
sheath,
mm-hmm.
take great care of it, and pass it on to the next Brewing Network listener who has sent in an email and let us know what they're going to do with the hat. So they're all going to be I want the hat to travel the world, which isn't to say it can't go all around the United States and all the different places here and capitals and national parks and the whole thing, but then obviously out of our country too. So that's what we're starting here with our official Brewing Network Jane hat. Please write justin@thebrewingnetwork.com if you're going to the NHC and what you can do with the Jane hat. Pictures will have to be posted in the forum.
Clean pictures.
We'll then put them on our Brewing Network homepage and start the official trend of the Stanley Cup of the Brewing Network.
Nice.
That's pretty cool, huh?
I think it's great.
I like the idea. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm really interested to see where this hat shows up.
It'll be good.
Yeah, it'll be totally cool. All right, so we got to get out of here.
Yeah. I think my ass
grew. So what are we doing in Florida? Are we getting in Thursday?
We're getting in Wednesday.
Thursday
morning. We leave here Wednesday night, but I'm cheap, so we don't get there till Thursday morning.
Thanks, by the way.
We're setting up at the event, which does, in fact, open on Thursday. So our whole booth will be... It does open Thursday, right, JP?
It does open Thursday, yeah.
We'll be there with our booth and just kind of talking about the Brewing Network, letting people know what it is that we do and kind of spreading the word. And then on Friday, we'll actually be bringing... And we might do some interviews on Thursday, but we won't be airing them. On Friday and Saturday, we're going to air two live shows, assuming that the internet connection works out for us. Otherwise, we'll archive them and broadcast them at their regular time on Sunday. We'll start at 5 o'clock with our NHC shows, and we'll broadcast those for you. We're going to get all sorts of interviews from the people that are there. Not all of them will be live. Some will come on during the show. The other ones we're going to record and then put up on the website for you folks so that you get an idea what's happened at the NHC.
We're going to play games. We're going to have goodies with us.
Lots and lots of giveaways do we have for that thing.
And we're going to sell our shirts.
So please join us. That's this week, later on. Thursday the 22nd is when it starts. We'll be broadcasting on Friday the 23rd and Saturday the 24th. Please go to beertown.org if you still think you can make it and buy yourself some tickets and join us out in Orlando, Florida later on this week. Kevin Pratt, BJCP National Judge, thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
I think you really did a great kind of eye-opening experience for us about what it's like behind the scenes to judge, and a good lesson in how to become a judge. It's a rigorous thing, and much respect for what you've gone through to become a judge.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think Kevin did the longest show ever so far.
I think we've gone to 9:30 before.
Really?
Yeah, but you're up there, Kevin. You're right up there.
There.
Good
no
work.
Problem.
I still have a bunch of questions, too.
Stamina.
You know?
We'll have to get the man back to do
so
more.
Now that the show's over, can I get a beer?
Absolutely. Tomorrow we're having Jamil's show, right? An extra 2-hour special.
2 hours of Jamil. We start at 9 a.m. tomorrow instead of 10, and we're doing both Kolsch and Alt.
Fantastic.
Jamil and John will be doing that for you guys. 2 hours of Jamil's show tomorrow morning starting at 9 a.m. right here on the Brewing Network.
Sounds good.
Thanks a lot, everybody. JP, great job co-hosting. Appreciate you coming in.
Thanks, man. I'm glad to be back.
All right, brother. We'll see you in a couple of days in Florida as well.
I will make out with you. I mean, shake your hand real hard.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you in just a couple of days and tomorrow morning on The Jamil Show right here on the Brewing Network.
Good night.
Yeah, you know what?